राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रदाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिनि नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवमितचारिणे विशेषशून्यवादी पश्चादशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण सही कन्या सबूल त्यानंदा जय द्वैता गदाधर शिव कवि गोभक्तवृंदा जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभुरत्यानन्द प्रियद्वैता जगाध शिव कवि गौरभक्तवृन्द जय श्री कृष्ण सही कन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीयद्वैता जगाध शिव कवि गौरभक्तवृन्द जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभा
ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಯಶೋಧನಂದನ ಜಯ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯ ಯಶೋಧನಂದನ ಜಯ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನಸಾರಿ ಜಯ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನಸಾರಿ ಜಯ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಜಯ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರಿ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರಿ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಹರೇ ಹರಿ ರಾಮ ಹರೆ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೆ ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕೃಷ್ಣ hare 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 rama 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 hare 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 Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Radha Gopala Nanda Radha Gopala Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gopala Nanda Radha Gopala Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gopala Nanda Radha Gopala Nanda Radhe Jaya Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Jaya Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Jaya सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय गौरनिकाय जय गौरनिकाय जय गौरनिकाय जय गौरनिकाय जय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराम जय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराम जय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराम जय 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 प्रभुपा जय जय प्रभुपा
जयं विश्वपाद परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान अभयचरणारविंद भक्तवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की जयं नित्रेरा प्रविष्टोम विश्वपाद परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की अनंतकोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्याम कुंड राधाकुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगमाई की यमुनमाई की तुलसीदेवी की भक्तिदेवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो विश्वपदाय कृष्ण प्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमति भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिनी नमस्ते सरस्वदेव गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददादिं स्वपदान्तिकम् वंदेहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगल्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांद राधा कांद नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्यं प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम राम हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवताम् नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रदिताम् पुराण मुनिनाम् मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्। नमोऽस्तु देव्यास विशाल बुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायत पत्र नेत्र येन त्वया भारत तैलपूर्णं प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रदीप। प्रपन्न पारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकवानये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वल्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महन् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं। भीष्मद्रोणतडा जयद्रथजल गान्धारनीलोत्पल शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण महनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोत्तीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशव। पाराशर्यवजःसरोजममलम् गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटम् नानाख्यानकेसरम् हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितम् लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः ते पीयमानम् मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजकलिमल प्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे। मूकम् करोति वाचालम् पङ्गुम् लङ्घयति गिरिम् यल्कृपातमहम् वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्। यम् ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दि दिव्यैस्तवै वेदैः साङ्गपदैः क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायन्ति यम् सामगाः ध्यानावस्थितद्गदेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यम् योगिनो यस्यान्दम् न विदुस्तुरा सुरगणै देवाय तस्मै नमः। ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः। श्रीमती राधिकायै नमः। सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द। Continuing from last Sunday, the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we have just started discussing the chapter known as Bhakti Yogam or devotional service. So, as I mentioned before, Krishna has, in just 20 verses, has packed so much important understanding of spiritual life. Not only Bhakti Yogam, although the chapter is titled as Bhakti Yogam, there are other things like jnanam, karmam and yogam, all are covered in this chapter to some degree. In addition to that, Krishna has also spoken about the importance of Krishna consciousness over everything else and how difficult it is to separate one from the other. Those things you can see in this chapter. So Arjuna says to Krishna, एवं सततयुक्ताये भक्तास्त्वं परिपासदे ये चाप्यक्षरम् अव्यक्तम् तेषाङ्गे योगवितमाः। अर्जुन सेज़ टू कृष्ण दैट वन हू इज वर्शिपिंग यू उपासदे भक्तास्त्वं परिपासदे वन हू इज परफॉर्मिंग उपासना। आई मेंशन्ड दिस बिफोर द डिफरेंस बिटवीन साधना एंड उपासना। देयर टू डिफरेंट थिंग्स। Upasana means totally intense in all aspects, completely to please Krishna. that is fully full commitment, that is upasana. So evam satata yuktaye bhaktvastvam parivasade, a devotee who is serving Krishna with total commitment in order to release oneself from this bondage once for all, from this cycle of birth and death. If a devotee who serves him, which is known as the saguna worship, saguna means a devotional service, what we perform. We read that from the Prabhupada's purport in the first verse, sagunam and nirgunam. Arjuna asked Krishna, satatam yuktaye bhaktastvam parivasade, one who is performing spiritual activities or spiritual bhakti yoga process in order to release himself from the cycle of birth and death, is he dear to you or ejapyaksharam avyaktam teshanke yogavitamaha, or one who is attached to the avyaktam. Avyaktam means the nirgunam side or the impersonal side of Krishna, impersonal Brahman. If you remember when we discussed this Bhagavad Gita earlier chapters, 8th chapter, particularly the 8th chapter, Akshara Brahma Yogam, that was the chapter referring to that. Akshara Brahma means the impersonal Krishna or the Om, understanding of Om. So, there the question came up. Arjuna's question was very, very important question, because this one question will always come in spiritual life, personalism and impersonalism, which one to follow. And most of us have to make a selection at some point, what is the route to go. And what Krishna explains in this, in such a way, it is a very, very difficult thing, because even for Krishna it's difficult to explain that, how this impersonalism and personalism, because both come from the Vedas. So there is no question of rejecting one or the other. Both, they are both important. But what has happened here is, Arjuna put forward this question, which one of them is the best, the process? That was the question. So when you have two good things, out of that to select one is very difficult also. And both these personalism and impersonalism developed due to different reasons, how that acharyas have developed in that way. They are all in the Shastram. Teshamke yoga vitamaha. Which one of them is the best? Arjuna asked. So how did Krishna reply? Krishna replied, as I mentioned before, looking after that a mother's situation with two children, which one to choose? If somebody says to the mother, ultimately you have to choose one out of them, the only option left for the mother is to take a diplomatic route by saying that this little boy is dearer to me, but at the same time wings at the grown-up one, saying that you don't have to complain about it because he does not understand, but you are as dear to me as the other person is. This is Krishna's situation. Because the jnani and the bhakta are on two different levels. Jnani's position is, he has decided to go in his route and he has taken to the process on his own, not being so dependent on Krishna. We have talked about this before when we talked about the three different jnanam, karmam and bhakti. In the Bhagavatam also you can see that. So there, the jnani situation is, he is a grown-up child. Say for example, parents have got two children. One is small and one is big. What will they do? They will ask the grown-up one to walk in the front and the little one they will carry. Isn't it? So it's the same situation with a devotee. Bhakta requires protection from Krishna all the time. Jnani situation is a little different because he has already has some understanding of spiritual life, and it is through his detachment and renunciation from this world and the knowledge that is driving him in his spiritual path. So he does not require that kind of attention like the devotee has. Devotee's position is very vulnerable sometimes because his knowledge is not fixed, mind is not fixed in it, spiritual path yet. Different kinds of vikshepams are coming into the mind. He is not clear in his own mind what he wants. But at the same time, there is some attachment for Krishna. So Krishna takes note of all these things, and that is why it's spoken in this example, in order to make it very clear. One thing is Jnana Margam and Bhakti Margam. They are both processes in the Bhagavad Gita discussed in detail at different places. And Krishna has spoken through both of them. In some places Krishna says, a devotee is very dear to me. In another place Krishna will say, Jnani is also very dear to me. Ega Bhaktar Vishishyade, Krishna says. And in other places, Krishna talked about the devotees also. So when this question came up from Arjuna, How did Krishna answer that question? That is also very interesting to see. In the number of verses from now, how Krishna answered that question was like this. Krishna said that, first Krishna said, my choice is for the devotee. That's what first Krishna made it very clear. My choice is, I consider the devotee as superior. But having said that, immediately Krishna goes on to explain about the impersonalist approach to Krishna. Krishna talks about them and their approach also. And then Krishna compares and says, Klesho adhigadarastesham avyakta asakta jedasam avyakta ahigadir dukham dehavad bhiravapyade. Why it is difficult to follow the impersonal process? Krishna explains afterwards. So from this you can understand that the process is difficult. The impersonal way of approaching Krishna is very difficult process. And why it is difficult, Krishna explains after that. And from then on, Krishna talks about Krishna consciousness and spiritual life and how to come to that platform of a Krishna conscious person. So 20 verses, Krishna spoke about a lot of things, and therefore it is important to reflect on all these verses as much time as possible and think through it, because by thinking about it, you will get a number of questions. Why did Krishna say like this? Bhagavad Gita is like that. It's continuously generating new questions, more and more questions in our own mind. That is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. For example, if you take Bhagavad Gita and look at it, you will find that from chapter 1 to right up to this chapter, Krishna has not even spoken about temple worship, has he? Not in one chapter Krishna has spoken about temple worship. What do we understand from that? That means, first chapter started with Arjuna's lamentation, and for many, many chapters after that, it is spoken about karmam. And then from about dhyanam, and then pranavam, and then again about when it comes to Raja Yogam, a few verses reference to bhakti process. Raja Yogam spoken about the bhakti process. And immediately after that, Krishna's vibhutis, and then universal form. This is all what we have seen so far. And in this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has not spoken about temple worship till now, about deity worship. So you can understand that. Normally, most of the people have this understanding. If I go to the temple, I see the deity, that's a spiritual life, nothing else. If I see the deity, I pay my obeisances, I come home, or I chant Hare Krishna and see the deities and take prasadam, and with that our spiritual life finishes. But it is not like that. That Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is opening up our eyes. How did this deity worship come into existence, first of all? That is important thing. How did this deity worship come to this world, this process of deity worship? And the same deity worship is always used as criticized the Vedic philosophy. Many people, many other religious processes, they criticize Vedic philosophy for performing deity worship, saying that God is not a person whom you can worship in the form of a stone or in a picture or anything like that. And they have great objection to worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a particular form. All that things we have to answer from this chapter. So this chapter is very, very important from that point of view. Before I go into detail, I'll just refer to a few important things what Prabhupada has mentioned here. I'll only pick up those sentences, otherwise we'll be short of time. So I'll just read those sentences and please keep them in your mind when we are discussing further. First chapter, 12th chapter, verse 1. In the commentary, fourth paragraph, beginning with, Krishna says, in the second chapter, Prabhupada says, in the second chapter, Lord explains that a living entity is not the material body, but the spiritual part of the Absolute Truth. Then in the seventh chapter, he speaks of the living entity, part and parcel of Krishna. Eighth chapter, whoever thinks of Krishna at the moment of death, at once transferred to spiritual sky. Sixth chapter, Lord says that out of all yogis, who thinks of Krishna himself is considered to be the most perfect. So throughout Bhagavad Gita, personal devotion to Krishna is recommended as the highest form of spiritual realization. Yet, there are those who are still attracted to Krishna's impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence, which is the all-pervasive aspect of the Absolute Truth and which is unmanifest and beyond the reach of the senses. So, Prabhupada says here that although the personal relationship with Krishna, which is a personal form of worship, is the most favorable one, which is recommended as the highest form of worship, still there are those who are still attracted to the impersonal form. Then, in the second verse, if you see at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says that a pure devotee is constantly engaged. Sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, or sometimes he cooks prasadam or goes to the marketplace to purchase something for Krishna, or sometimes he washes the temple or the dishes. Whatever he does not let a single moment pass without doing his activities to Krishna. Such action is in full samadhi. Then, if you look into the verse 3 and 4 purport, Prabhupada says there, after those who do not directly worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, but who attempt to achieve the same goal by an indirect process, also ultimately achieve the supreme goal. So, whether you follow the personal process, impersonal process, ultimately you reach the supreme goal. As Krishna stated, after many births, the man of wisdom seeks refuge in me, knowing Vasudeva is all. And at the very end of the second paragraph of that verse 3 and 4 purport, Prabhupada says there he sees no difference between man and animal because he sees the soul only, not the outer covering. But for the common man, this method of impersonal realization is very difficult. If we go into verse 5, the purport begins. The group of transcendentalists who follow the path of the inconceivable, unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord are called Jnana Yogis. And persons who are in full Krishna consciousness, engage in devotional service to the Lord, are called Bhakti Yogis. Now here, the difference between Jnana Yogam and Bhakti Yogam is definitely expressed. The process of Jnana Yogam, although ultimately bringing one to the same goal, is very troublesome. Whereas the path of Bhakti Yogam, the process of being in direct service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is easier and is natural for the embodied soul. If you go a few lines further down, there is evidence in the Vedic literature that the worship may be sagunam and nirgunam, of the supreme possessing or not possessing attributes. Worship of the deity in the temple is saguna worship, for the Lord is represented by material qualities. And way down further, in the third paragraph, Prabhupada says there, they have to understand the unmanifested representation of the Supreme through such Vedic literature as the Upanishads, and they have to learn the language, understand the non-perceptual feelings, and they have to realize all these processes. This is not very easy for a common man. So, yes, so there are this comparison between personalism and impersonalism. So as I mentioned before, Krishna has not discussed about temple worship till now in the Bhagavad Gita. That means almost 11 chapters have gone without even reference to the deity worship. And deity worship is such an important part of the Krishna consciousness process. Still, Krishna has not discussed that till now. That is the one important thing you have to note here. Now, when we come to the Bhagavad Gita, this sagunam and nirgunam, these are the two important things. Sagunam means with attributes and nirgunam means without attributes. I mean, to give the Supreme Personality of Godhead that form, worship in the, with form and without form. That is the sagunam and nirgunam. Jnanam, bhakti, karma, all these are discussed in this Bhagavad Gita in these chapters. Some people worship sagunam, the form with form, and some people follow the process of process without form, that is the nirguna form or realization of the Brahman. So in this first question, Arjuna asked this to Krishna, which of this is more important? That was the which of this is superior? That was the question from Arjuna. Shri Bhagavan Vaja, Krishna answers that, Mayavesha Mano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasade Shraddhaya Parayo Vedasteme Yukta Damo Mada. That was the immediate answer from Krishna. What does it mean? Mayavesha Mano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasade Shraddhaya Parayo Vedasteme Yukta Damo Mada. Krishna says, that one who is attached to me, who absorbs his mind in me, mayavesha mana, that's what it means, that who absorbs his mind all the time in me, nitya yukta upasade, completely committed to worshipping me, upasade, upasana. So, we'll come to what upasana means. There is definition to all these terminologies in the shastram, what upasana means. So, mayavesha mano yemam nitya yukta upasade, shraddhaya parayobedasteme yukta tamomada. That word shraddha there is such an important word. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has given, not given importance to many words like that, like this word shraddha. Krishna says there, shraddhaya parayobedasteme yukta tamomada. In my opinion, Krishna says, one who has got shraddha and she is serving me, he is superior to the impersonal worshipper, or who is approaching me through the impersonal worshipper. Now, this word shraddha here requires a lot of deep understanding of the word, why it has been used like that. Often people think that I have come to spiritual life, I am engaged in temple worship, or I am engaged in spiritual activities, I am doing this for the deity, that for the deity, I have done this, I have done that, so many things. And in due course of time, people also get to misunderstand things, that I'm doing everything carefully. Only thing is, I'm getting a salary from that. That's alright. So, where did this mentality come? Because there is no Shraddha. That is why it is coming like this. That if you strictly follow Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita, if this Shraddha simply means that one who serves Krishna with full love and affection, without expecting anything in return, otherwise we may as well close this Bhagavad Gita. There's no meaning to it. That's why Krishna is saying there. Here Krishna has used specifically that word, mayavesha mano yemam nitya yukta upasate shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yukta tamo madaham. That yukta tamam, that means parayo vedaste me yukta tamo madaham. That he is superior as long as he is doing it with shraddha. Otherwise this process is not the superior process. If it is done expecting returns from Krishna for the service, that is not Shraddha. The impersonal worship is far superior than that. That is what we have to remember. That mayavesha mano yema nitya yukta upasade shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yukta tamo madaham. That Krishna says that as long as the worship process is continuing with complete commitment to serving Krishna, purely for the sake of serving and feeling that realization that it's my duty to serve Krishna and it is not my concern what I receive back from Krishna. Only if in that mood the service is executed, that is Shraddha. Otherwise it's not Shraddha. So this is the most important thing. Mayaveshama evam satada yuktayem bhakta aswam paryubhasade ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yogavitamaha. Arjuna is asking this question, who is superior? The answer to that is, Krishna is saying here, mayavesha mano yemam nitya yukta upasade shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yukta tamo madaham. Shraddhaya parayo vedaste, if it is not done with shraddha, it is as well as a waste of time. That is what it is not anymore the process what Krishna is discussing in the Bhagavad Gita. It is something else, our own mental concoction. That is. So, those who people, sometimes it's very hard to get this point to the head of many, many people. They find it very hard to understand that how come that I have to serve Krishna without getting anything in return? What's the point in doing this? What does this mean? What does spiritual life mean? Spiritual life means to give up this material attachment and serve Krishna wholeheartedly. Otherwise, it's not spiritual life. Otherwise, and sometimes, it seems that it is a very hard thing to get across to the mind, many, many people. They do not understand that Krishna has not spoken to us something in a very light-hearted way. All these 20 verses in the Bhagavad Gita in this chapter are pregnant with so much deeper understanding that in order to understand progress on the path of spiritual life, unless one takes to this process, as Krishna says, otherwise it has no meaning. Prabhupada explains that if you will go further from there in the same chapter, if you go a little further, you'll see there, verse 9, actually that purport as much affects this verse also. If you look at the purport verse 9, the second chapter, second paragraph, in the purport. Prabhupada says there, in this material existence, I may be engaged in some service to master, but I don't really lovingly serve my master. I simply serve to get some money. And the master also is not in love, but he takes service from me and pays me. So there is no question of love. And this is very simple to understand. But for spiritual life, one must be elevated to the pure stage of love. So if it is not done in love for Krishna's service, that service is a waste of time. It is simply a waste of time. We are just wasting our time in this world, that in the name of spiritual life, this is how Bhakti Yoga process degenerates. It degrades into this. And eventually everybody thinks that I am making spiritual progress, but suffering increases day by day. It will increase because we have not accepted Krishna's wholeheartedly, Krishna's instructions. Rather, something which is done in a simpler way than in the most opulent way, but done with for faithfulness, is much better service than serving Krishna in the wrong way. So here, Mayaveshamano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasade Shraddhaya Pareyo Vedaste Me Yukta Tamo Madaham. Krishna says, if one is serving Krishna with pure devotion and pure heart, that means without expecting anything in return from Krishna, Krishna does not care whether we give or we don't give, whether we take or we don't take. But important thing is, process is like that. As far as Krishna is concerned, Krishna says that if you want to come to me and if you want to please me, this is the process. Process Krishna has defined already there. So, Mayaveshamano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasade Shraddhaya Pareyo Vedaste Me Yukta Tamo Madaham. So, this process of worshipping the deity in the temple, this is called Sagunam. Sagunam and Nirgunam, two things. Sagunam is the process we worship the deity. That is the process of worshipping the deity process is the Sagunam worship. Saguna Brahmam, Nirguna Brahmam. There are two different terminologies used in the Shastram. So, this Vigraham, we will see there, word Vigraha is used in many places. In the Shastram, it is referred to as Vigraham. Shri Vigraha Aradhana Murtyananam Shangaradhan Mandiram Arjanadam. It is in the Guru Ashtakam also. The spiritual master is serving the Vigraham. Vigraham means the form of Krishna, or the deity, deity form of Krishna. Strictly speaking, this word Vigraham comes from this. Visheshana Tattva Grahyam, that is Vigraham. That means, in order to understand the tattvam, the truth, if one utilizes anything for that purpose, that becomes a vigraham. Automatically it becomes a vigraham. So, that is actually the definition of vigraham. That visheshana, by a special way or in a special method, if you take the help of anything to advance in spiritual life and you worship that through a process to worship the deity. Deity worship is one of them. In Bhagavadam, it is referred to as Shaili Darumayi Lephya, Lephyaja Saigadi, Manomayi Manimayi. Krishna says, in all these different forms, you can worship me. What all they? Manomayi Manimayi. If you have a form of Krishna in your heart, you can perform your puja to him. And or in some jewelry, very expensive jewel, you can worship that as a representation of Krishna. Shaili Darumayi Lehi Lepyaja Saigadi. Shaili means for the Shila or the stone, you can see me there. Through a stone you can worship me. Darumayi, through wood you can worship me. Lehya Lepyaja Saigadi, through sand you make a clay form of me and you can worship me there. So Krishna has given me various options to worship him through various mediums. They are all Vigraham. They are all Vigraham. Because all these are forms approved by the Acharyas and Supreme Lord Himself. So, Vigraham is nothing but a form through which we are approaching Krishna. Krishna cannot be tied down to one form or the other. Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything emanates. How can we limit Him to something? But in order that for our benefit, for our convenience, because our mind, our senses, our intelligence cannot go beyond certain things, so Krishna has agreed to come to this form so that we can approach Him in that form. That is the deity. So, Vigraham or deity worship is not simply limited to that form. Anything that is taken to worship, to approach the truth, anything that is taken to approach the truth, if it helps you, that becomes a Vigraham. Generally, this criticism comes from other quarters, isn't it? They say that, or the Vedic followers of Vedic literature or Vedic philosophy, they alone use this deity worship. They are against this. But strictly speaking, they are also following the Vigraham. They also have their own processes of deity worship. But it is not a deity form they are seeing. For example, in Christianity, they use the cross. They see the cross. A cross is nothing but a Vigraham. Actually, although it is something that is bringing them a connection with the truth. So, as soon as there is a material object there, it becomes a Vigraha, straight away. Even in Islam, who criticizes Vedic philosophy for this reason, they are also deity worshippers in a different way. If you look at it, they also have certain restrictions. What are they? When they do their prayers 5 times a day, those who are very strict in their prayers, you will notice that they are particular about which direction they pray. They know which direction they pray. You can see in the prayer rooms and every places where it is marked which is north or west or east or south. Normally they direct towards the western direction they pray. And even while traveling the ships or many places in the airports and all, you will see them. It is specifically marked which direction it is. So why there is a particular direction, immediately it becomes a Vigraham. So Vigraham is unavoidable in our human form of condition, human existence, where we are conditioned by mind, intelligence and senses. In order for us to make a relationship with the Supreme Truth, we require some medium to get through. And that is the deity worship or Vigraha Aradhana. So it is no question at all criticizing one follower, saying that they are deity worshippers, we don't worship deity. No, it's not true. They all have, in a subtle form, one way or the other, are worshipping in the same process. They are not different from that. So, coming back to this, that this question, when it was raised by Arjuna to Krishna, Shraddhaya Parayobeda Steme Yukta Dhamamada. Krishna says, only if there is Shraddha, and that too Paradhamam, it is to be supreme Shraddha, and he is superior than the impersonalist. Krishna says like that. Then, what did he say? Ye Tvaksharam Anirdesham Avyaktam Paryubasade Sarvatra Adamachindyanja Kudastamajala Dhruvam Sanyam Yendriya Gramam Sarvatra Samabuddhayaha Te Pratnu Vandimameva Sarvabhutahiredaha. So, although Krishna said in these words that personalists who worship me with pure heart and pure devotion, if they serve me, they are superior. Immediately after that, Krishna says about the impersonalists. What is Krishna says there? That, etvaksharam anirdesham avyaktam varyubasade sarvatra gamachindyanja kudastama jaladruvam. Then, in order that one may approach Krishna, Krishna has given this opportunity. The acharyas have established massive temples for this purpose, so that we can relate with Krishna some form or the other. Otherwise, it is very, very difficult. Supreme Personality, whom we have not seen, whom we have only heard from the Shastram about him, and how can we relate with him? Therefore, processes of deity worship has been established. And it is natural for a human nature, it is like that. That it is, you can only relate with certain things in this creation. And that way we feel satisfied and some connection begins for us with Krishna. Once it so happened that a great sannyasi, he went to see a king. And this king was an impersonalist. So the king never enjoyed, and the sannyasi spoke to him various things from the He talked to him various things from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita to him. And the sannyasi was being honored by the king. So the king told him, when sannyasi spoke about Krishna's pastimes and beautiful form of Krishna, the king felt that he was not very much attracted to that form. It was his mind, state of mind was such, that somehow he has groomed himself on the impersonal path. So, during the conversation, the sannyasi noticed that the king had no interest when he spoke about the temple. When he spoke about the temple and temple worship. The sannyasi tried very hard to explain to him that the process of sagunam or worship of form is also the easiest process, as well as it's something which is necessary. When sannyasi said this, the king would not accept it. Kings are very powerful people in those days, and they will not easily, even if it is a sannyasi, because of the kshatriya nature in them, they are respectful, but at the same time, the kshatram and brahmam, brahmanam, brahmanyam and kshatram, they are two forces always opposing each other. One is pregnant with sattugunam and very limited rajogunam. Kshatram is full of rajogunam with a limited sattugunam in that. So you can see that problem. So the sannyasi didn't say anything to him. In the evening, when the king invited him for the prasadam, it was a big arrangement, like the royal style. Everything was arranged. A full feast was arranged for in honor of the sannyasi. Sannyasi was a very well-known person at that time. And the king felt that he should honor him with a big feast. And they could also continue further discussions. There were many other guests also in the room at the same time. So the sannyasi thought, he came to the room, and in the dining hall, they have kept the photographs of all the kings from the past. Just like you can see in many, many big families, they'll keep their few generations photographs or some paintings fully drawn and nicely kept on the wall, so that they know there, when you go there, you know who, what their connections are, the big, big people prior to them who appeared in that family. So there he noticed that the king, current king's father's, his photo was there, and his father's photo was there, like few generations, their photos were all in the dining hall. And there were garlands on all the photos. And particularly, there was a fresh garland on the photo of the father of this current king. His father's photo, there was a fresh garland on that. So, the sannyasi walked around in the room and said to the king who was there, "Can I have a look at that photo a little bit closer? So, can you bring it down from there?" he said. So, the king thought that, oh, he is naturally want to know who it is. He said, "It's my father and the last king who was here." And they brought the photo down. As soon as he brought the photo down, he threw it on the floor. And he spat on that. And he wanted to put his feet on top of the photograph. As soon as he went to put the feet on the photo, the king got angry with him. He says, the sannyasi says to him, "Why are you getting angry about this?" He says, you're insulting my father," he said. "I'm not insulting. It's only a picture, isn't it? It's only just a paper. Why are you worried about that?" he said. So, earlier, when they discussed about personalism and impersonalism, he tried to convince that form can be easily rejected by you, although in everyday life you are dealing with different forms all the time. But when it came to your own father, you couldn't tolerate it. But when it comes to Krishna's form, why you have such a problem? This was the question. When he raised this question, the sannyasi raised, king was an intelligent person. He understood what the message was. So he apologized to the sannyasi, saying to him, "I was offensive, not thinking in that direction." He said, "I understand that the form of Supreme Personality of Godhead is as important, if not more important, than the impersonal side of Krishna." So he was able to get that message through by this example. There was no other way he could get this to him. So only when you understand that you already subtle way, we are identifying with all forms in this world, all the time we are identifying with different forms in this world. How can it be that when it comes to the Supreme Personality, the Creator, there is no form? How can that be? Is there something not more offensive than that, to think like that? So, but then why do people take to impersonal worship? That is another thing that we will talk later. So here, from this incident, what happened was, the king understood that why temple worship is important, why temple worship cannot be given up by anyone who has this understanding, and why it is necessary to continue temple worship, and up to what point. All that is discussed in this chapter. Up to what point one should continue with temple worship, and why one cannot avoid temple worship, and how one should continue, how one should follow this process of temple worship. All these things are discussed in this Bhakti Yogam chapter. That's the beauty of this chapter. Maya Veshamano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasade Shraddhaya Pareyo Vedaste Me Yukta Tamo Madaham. Shraddha is the most important thing. Without Shraddha, if it is done, it is useless. It is not going to bring any results at the end. It will become a way of life at the end. That's no use. because this Shraddha example is there in the Shastra many instances. Sri Narada Maharshi went to Vaikuntham once to see Krishna. Sri Narada Maharshi thought, I am chanting all the time, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. That is Narada Muni is singing, isn't it, on the Veena. And he is traveling all the universes. So Narada Muni thought that I am the greatest devotee because who else is chanting like me? In the Bhakti Sutram, Narada Muni has written a book called Sri Narada Bhakti Sutram. It's one of the most famous literature, authoritative literature on the Bhakti process, Narada Bhakti Sutram. And in Narada Bhakti Sutram, Sri Narada Maharshi discusses all aspects of Bhakti and gives his conclusions on that, which is one of the best books to read through. So here, what Sri Narada Maharshi did was, he went to Vaikuntham to see Vishnu and asked Mahavishnu that he wanted to know from Mahavishnu here, who is the greatest devotee? Who is the greatest devotee? Actually, this is a pastime for Sri Narada Maharshi. Narada Maharshi is not to be thought in any bad way in from this story. That must be said before, because people will think, oh, Narada Maharshi is not so advanced. No. All these things, what we see in the Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita, all these things are spoken only to give us some understanding of bhakti process. Because often that is where we fall down. We misunderstand things. Sri Narada Maharshi went to Krishna, and Krishna asked Narada Maharshi, why did you come? Narada Maharshi said to Krishna, I have one important question, he said. Question was this, who do you think is the greatest devotee in this world? Narada Maharshi was thinking that Krishna will say, you are the greatest devotee. That was probably going through his mind. But Krishna thought for a while and decided that Narada Maharshi should know what does devotion means. So through Narada Maharshi, Krishna is teaching us. Narada Maharshi knew very well. After all, he is the greatest acharya who created Valmiki, Vedavyas, two great personalities, Ramayanam and Mahabharatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam, they have come through Sri Narada Maharshi. Without Sri Narada Maharshi, we will not have this great Vedic literature, Ramayanam, Mahabharatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam. So from that point of view, Narada Maharshi is no way in any way to be thought of in the wrong way. What we have to realize is, Sri Narada Maharshi went to Krishna and with this question on our behalf. If you think like that, it is perfect. Krishna says to Narada Maharshi that, go down from here to the earthly planet, and in the earth on a particular place, you will find one farmer there. Go and see him and see his devotion and come back to me after that, he said. Narada Maharshi came back, still chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuously chanting, Narada Maharshi comes back to this earthly planet. Went down to this particular spot where Krishna has told him to go. There he saw this farmer who was referred to as the greatest devotee. Sri Narada Maharshi thought, what kind of devotee? He gets up in the morning. After he gets up, what he does first thing is that he gets himself ready for the work. And after his breakfast and all, he gets his tools and goes to the field. When he gets to the field, he puts the tools down and gets ready to start the work. Just before he starts the work, he folds his hands and chants Krishna's name. Very sincerely he chanted Krishna's name. Once or twice he chanted. And then he started his work. Throughout the day he worked, and in the evening he comes home, and after that he has been, he has bathed himself, took prasadam, and had little family affairs to sort out. He did all that. And before going to bed, before he went to sleep, he again recited Krishna's holy name a couple of times. And then he went to sleep. So, when the farmer left the house in the morning, Narada Muni was dressed in a way he cannot be seen. Narada Muni is very expert at these things. You know, he tested Krishna also in Dwaraka once. If you remember that story in the Bhagavatam. Unnoticed by others. So he could do that. So he unnoticed by anyone, Narada Muni accompanied this farmer. Narada Muni never noticed him chanting any time. Only twice he chanted Krishna Krishna and started this very sincerely he started his work. And whole day he has not, Narada Muni kept a note. Is he chanting? No, he has only note. Narada Muni has kept a note of it. Twice he has chanted the name. Krishna's holy names he has chanted twice so far. And right up till evening, He has not chanted the holy name at all. And before going to bed, twice he has chanted again. So 2 plus 2, 4 times he has chanted Krishna's names in the whole day. Narada Muni thought, what's this? This is the greatest devotee Krishna is telling me. So he goes back to Vaikuntham and says to Krishna that I have seen your greatest devotee. He has chanted so far 4 times your holy name. He said, Krishna smiled at him and says to him, okay, Narada Muni, we will ask you now to do something. And then told him to go to a particular temple and circumambulate the deity there and come back. So while circumambulating the deity, Krishna told him, I'll give you something to keep it on top of your head. Put it on your head and keep that on your head and circumambulate the deity and come back here. And then we'll discuss it further, he said. And then Krishna arranged a whole pot of milk and put it on top of his head. Sri Narada Maharshi said. And Narada Muni started thinking that he has to walk around without this pot falling from his head. That was the agreement. So while walking, Sri Narada Maharshi was so careful so that the pot doesn't fall and not even a drop of milk should spill from the pot. So what did Krishna do? After fill the pot with milk, and after putting it on the head, poured a little bit more, so that it is completely full. There was a little shake, the milk will drop from the pot. Narada Muni took everything very carefully, he walked. He started walking around the deity. So all the time the balancing, properly balanced, he was walking, so that not a drop will fall from the pot. He circumambulated the deity room, and then he comes back to Vaikuntha. He has succeeded. Krishna sent somebody to watch how many times Narada Muni was chanting during this process. So, when he came back, Krishna asked for the report. How many times has Narada Muni chanted the holy name? There was not once he has chanted. Krishna asked Narada Muni, have you chanted the holy name? Narada Muni said, how can I chant when I was holding the milk on my head? How can I chant? So, Krishna is saying there, the message is like this. Shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yuktatamo madaha. Without Shraddha, without that seriousness, simply doing mechanically for thousands of times will not bring the result. It will go on like that for a very, very long time. That is why through this story of Srinada Maharshi, Krishna is teaching us that anything that is executed without Shraddha, Shraddha means following Krishna's instructions rigidly, without deviating from that. If we say to Krishna, look, all what you have said is very difficult for us, we will do it our way, and then we want him to make us progress in spiritual path, that may not happen. Progress will only happen when we follow Krishna's instructions. Otherwise it is meaningless. This is the reason why in Varnashrama Dharma, the upper category of people, Brahmanas, they are called Brahmanas. Why? Because they were so rigid in their commitment in Krishna consciousness. They will not pollute their Krishna consciousness with falsities, with false things, and make it suit their material life. That is cheating actually. That is not helping Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means to follow Krishna's instructions. What is bhakti? Maya veshimano yemam nityayuktam upasade shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yuktadamo madaham. Simply going around telling people, because I worship Krishna, personal form, and I take my salary, therefore I am superior to impersonalist. It doesn't work like that. The impersonalist is definitely superior in that situation. Shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yuktadamo madaham. That Shraddha is the thing, that is the driving thing in that whole thing. Krishna will repeat these words, Ashraddhadana Purusha Dharmasyasya Varandava Aprapyamam Nivartande Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. If you want to come out of this cycle of birth and death, Krishna says that Ashraddhadana Purusha, one who has no Shraddha, there is no use, Krishna says. Even this very chapter, how does Krishna end at the end of this chapter? If you look at verse 20, Krishna says, Yedu dharmyamrutamidam yadhoktam parivasade shraddhadanam alparama vaktaste divame priyaham. Yedu dharmyamrutamidam yadhoktam parivasade. Krishna calls this chapter as dharmyamrutam. Dharmyamrutam means, dharmam is what? Amrutam is nectar. Of all the dharmam, this is the nectar. Krishna says, what? Krishna consciousness. So that Krishna consciousness, if it is not executed with Shraddha, what Krishna has spoken here, it is completely polluted. It has no meaning at all. Therefore, in order to accept Krishna's words without any deviation, yedu dharmamrtam idam yathoktam parivasade shraddhadanam alparama vaktaste divame priyaham. Shraddhanam, Krishna says Shraddha is there, to be there. If the Shraddha is not there, he is not dear to me. In other words, Krishna says if he has got the Shraddha in what he is doing, then he is very dear to me. So you can see throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has used this word Shraddha. What a Shraddha definition we have seen before when we discussed the third chapter. Shastrasya guruvakyasya satyabuddhyavadharana sa Shraddha. Shraddha means Shastram guruvakyam. In the words of Shastram, in the words of the spiritual master, absolute faith, implicit faith, Krishna calls it. Shastrasya guruvakyasya satyabuddhyavadharana. Satyabuddhyavadharana, satyabuddhi. Satyabuddhi means no doubting at all about it, accepting it as it is, without questioning that. But if we do change all these things, if we change everything, and then we make our own arrangements in Krishna consciousness, what we think, oh, this is all what we can do, this is the process what I prefer, in this way at least we can keep the things going, at least in this way people are coming to the temple, this is all useless excuses. Bhagavad Gita doesn't accept it. We have to live with the truth, what Krishna has spoken. Otherwise, we are not Brahmanas. We are not anywhere near to the Brahminical quality. Brahminical quality means to accept these principles and truth. Otherwise, where is the Brahminical quality? Otherwise, where is the Brahminical quality? Brahminical quality means to accept Krishna's words as they are. When Krishna says something, or on the spiritual master says something about it, what the Shraddha means, then we have to know the seriousness of that word. Otherwise, it is meaningless. So, epatsharamayadesham avyaktam parivasade sarvatra agamachindyanja kudastam ajaladruvam saniyam yendriyagramam sarvatra samabuddhaya te praptumandimam eva sarvabhudahideradaha. So, immediately after, Krishna has spoken about these, preference for the personal worship. Krishna has spoken that, Krishna has spoken about the impersonal side. About the impersonal side, in order to get it very clear to us, that, that everyone in this world is somewhere or the other attached to form. You can't get out of it. It is very, very difficult. Because our mind, senses and intelligence are wired in that way. How can we escape from that? Then to give up all forms and to say that there is no form, and for impersonal, is very, very difficult. For example, a lover carries the photograph of a beloved, isn't it? It's quite common in this world. And that is also vigraham. It's also vigraham, but the only thing is it's not a material platform. But the purpose is the same. In order to remember Krishna, we have deity worship. In order to remember the beloved, the lover carries the photograph. So the goal is the same. The medium is the same. Even if you take the marriage arrangements, some people don't like to carry wedding rings and things like that. They don't put it on. But some people are very attached to it, isn't it? Some people like their different kinds of rings. On all five fingers sometimes they have rings. So it's different understanding. So you can see, for the engagement they will have a ring. They will put in one ring. And then after that for wedding also another ring. And then we say after that a third ring, which is suffering, comes after that. All right. So two rings are followed by the third ring. You see? So this is what the marriage is all about. Engagement ring is wonderful. Wedding ring is also excellent. But the third ring is not very... it comes from these two rings, the other one. The third ring, actually. So what Krishna is saying here is that you cannot get out of these things. This is always within us. We are a part of that. Once you have grown up in this world, you will have that consciousness. It's very difficult to get out of that. So deity worship and temple worship has come from this understanding. There are people who will not accept anything unless there is some, they say, unless I see it, we won't believe it. Have you heard people like that who says like that? God, where is God? I'll show it to us, he says. That unless you show us, we won't believe that. So that concept itself is a wrong thing. And the wrong means, it is like this, that their argument is that sometimes they are called as yuktivadis. Yuktivadis means who accept based on yukti, logics. So they will only accept it when they have the logic. The logic is this, that unless you show it to us, that we won't believe it. Now, something what I have seen with my own eyes, if I have seen something, then I don't need any logic after that, do I? So their understanding there itself is wrong. If I see something and I have understood that's what it is, then where is the necessity for a logic in that? So that is not logic. That logic is not what Vedas are talking about. Vedic logic is little different. Vedic logic is like this. Something which you cannot see, or something that others have seen, a great personalities they have seen, if through logic you can make others to see that, that is the logic in the Vedas. That means something what you have not seen, or somebody else has seen, it's like the absolute truth. When we talk about spiritual life, that's what it is. Supreme truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Something what we have not seen, but somebody else has seen, and what we cannot see directly with our senses, through sense perception. If you can accept that through logic and reasoning, that is the Vedic logic. The logic in the Vedic literature is based on that. That if you can make somebody to accept that, the capacity of the intelligence to do that is called yukti or the logic. So if one has the intelligence to convince somebody else who does not accept the existence of the Supreme Person or Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, if you can convince him through logics and reasoning or through Shastra to him, and if he is willing to accept it, then you have succeeded in your mission. Or in other words, you have convinced him through logic and reasoning. You cannot see him directly, you cannot see the truth directly, but you are able to realize it through logic and reasoning from the Vedic literature. That is the beauty of Vedic literature. So, in this particular verse, Krishna has spoken that Shraddhaya parayo vedaste me yuktadamo madaham etvakshanam anirdesham. Now, why is sagunam and nirgunam? Two things have come. Then, saguna means one who worships the devotee with devotee who worships Krishna with completely focused mind. And the difficulty with most of us is our mind has got this ragam and dvesham, attachment and aversion to different things in this world, and krodham, anger and fear, and various kinds of experiences in this world makes us feel that we have a little difficulty in getting attached to Krishna's particular form. Then it is very difficult for the mind to particularly get fixed in one particular form of the Supreme Lord. Whatever form that is, either Krishna's form as a little boy, or Krishna's form as Parthasarathi, Krishna's form in the playing flute with Radharani or with Rukmini Devi, all the different forms of Krishna, it is very difficult to focus and get the mind absorbed in that. And that is where the difficulty comes. Mind keeps start jumping from one to another. Mind is the most difficult thing to control. So if in order that the mind has to get focused in a particular form, the mind should be attached to it. It should have some attraction for that form. So even if you try forcefully to get the mind onto it, after some time the mind will come off from that. This is the nature of the mind. We all know that, isn't it? Generally, people are whose mind is completely absorbed in material life, they'll find it very hard to focus the mind on Krishna's form. And sometimes you will also notice when people come to see the deity form of Krishna at the temple, they'll come and stand in front of the deity, they look at the deity and they'll close their eyes immediately. All this time they were waiting to see Krishna, but as soon as they see Krishna, immediately they close their eyes. Why do they do that? They're trying to get that form inside, isn't it? They're trying to get that form inside. That is why they close the eyes. Somehow trying to get Krishna inside, inwards. So this getting Krishna inside is a very difficult thing. Externally with the eyes you see the form of deity. But to get that form fixed up inside is the most difficult thing. And that is why when we are standing in front of the deity, often you will notice people close their eyes so that that form will manifest inside. That is what is required, because Krishna is closest to us inside, not outside. It is inside He is closest to us. But because we are not able to relate with Him there, we have to go through this roundabout process. Isn't it? Go through, see the deity. Through the deity we have to realize Him. And eventually after realization, what do we realize? We realize He is inside. That's what we realize, isn't it? So, what did Narada Muni say in the first canto of Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam and Narada Muni went to the forest after had this bitter experience of leaving the sages. And there, Sri Narada Maharshi was sitting there in the forest and meditating on Krishna's form. Where did Krishna appear? He appeared inside. Hridya sinme shanair hari. Bhagavatam says like that. He was not outside. Hridya sinme shanair hari. He saw Krishna where? Inside. Hridya sinme shanair hari. Narada Maharshi, who is the greatest authority on temple worship and Krishna consciousness, he is telling us, Hridya sinme shanair hari. I saw Hari, Supreme Personality, inside. Because he saw it inside, after some time Krishna disappeared. When Krishna disappeared, Narada Muni did not search for Him. Why? Because He was not outside, He was inside, so there was no need to search anywhere. He sat there and cried and cried and cried. And that is how that whole story goes in the first canto. So, in order to understand this, a devotee's position and an impersonal position is a little different. A devotee gets Krishna inside. You want Krishna to go in. Once Krishna goes in, then the devotee changes. It becomes Krishna's activities then. It is just a body working according to Krishna's direction. Everything after that. Some 100 years ago, an incident happened in this way. So, a great scholar came to a temple, a famous temple. And there he was talking about, from the Shastram, he was reading many, many Vedic literatures and explaining about it. There was also a great devotee in that temple, who used to read Srimad Bhagavatam every day, and he pleased Krishna with Srimad Bhagavatam, a great well-known exponent of Srimad Bhagavatam, and this great scholar, they were also both of them in the same temple. It happened to be at the same time. So it was natural in those days in the temples that when the great personalities come who are so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, not like the modern temples where it is like today, you come and you go in 2 seconds, you are come and gone. Most of the time is spent on useless things rather than absorbed in deity worship or in the temple worship. People don't participate so much to that extent. And this is the reason why in Kali Yuga people's consciousnesses are also like that. You can see, when Hiranyakashipu executed his penances, he was able to survive. If you read the description of Hiranyakashipu in the Bhagavadam, when he is performing penances to see Brahma, all his blood has stopped flowing, the flesh was not there, all what was left was the bones and that skull. That is what his form was. Hiranyakashipu's form in the Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see a picture like that drawn in that way. Why? Why is that like that? This happens in Satyugam. In Satyugam, people were called Astigata Pranam. Astigata Pranam means their life air won't leave the body, it will stick to the bones. To such an extent, they could survive. In other words, even without eating, even without having the blood circulation in the body, even without having flesh in the body, no flesh, no blood, and no other things in the body, still the life will survive. That was a Satyugam's life. Therefore, this classification has come. Astigata Pranan, Rudragata Pranan, Mamsagata Pranan, Annagata Pranan. The four yugas, people of this four different nature. So, Hiranyakashipu at that time, when he performed, executed those penances, what happened to him? He was with these bones. You will see that photo in the Bhagavatam. Devotees have drawn that picture. So, one may wonder, can a life survive like that? Yes, it can. It can survive. Why? Because Satyuga was Astigata Pranan. Asti was only the bones were required to survive in this world. When Lord Brahma came and from his kamandalu he picked a little water and sprinkled on Hiranyakashipu, Vajra Samhanane Yuva. Bhagavatam says he comes out from that like Vajra Samhanan. Vajra Samhanan means his body was looking like diamond. Apparently it looked like diamond. Generally people have the impression demon means very ugly looking and everything. No. Hiranyakashipu looked so youthful and so smart he looked. Shukadeva Goswami in the Bhagavatam says, Vajra Samhanane Yuva, that his youthfulness was such just by this little water which Lord Brahma sprinkled on that form of Hiranyakashipu, which was purely bones sticking with the life air, it took into transferred into this particular form. Sometimes when you read that, you will also get an impression, if Brahma could sprinkle a little bit on our body as well, how nice it would be. Because that was the potency of that sprinkling of that water from Brahma's kamandalu. So in the Bhagavatam you notice this. So Astikada Pranan was the condition of the people in the Satyugam. It came down a little down, people became helpless. So it became Amsagada Pranam, the flesh was necessary. By came to Tridayagam. In Dwapara Yugam it came to Rudhiragada Pranam, that means blood circulation was necessary. And Kali Yugam what happens? Annagada Pranam, that means if you don't eat, you can't live. You will die straight away. If you don't eat, you will die. So spiritually we have our material strength, our strength in the body, strength and determination in the body has continuously come down from Satyugam to Kali Yugam. And that is why everything becomes a big struggle for us in Kali Yugam. When we read all this Bhagavatam and the penances of the kings and the sages, we wonder what sort of people they were. How could they do this? Going into the forest, Dhruva Maharaj performing 6 months without drinking, without eating, standing on one foot. We are struggling to sit here for 2 hours on the floor. And there he was standing, a five-year-old boy with one foot. Why? Because that was Satyugam. That was his position. Our body has lost all. We don't have that strength in us. So this is the reason for that. So anyway, coming back to this story, the scholar and the devotee, they met each other. Somehow, on some issue, there was a discussion. A discussion started between the scholar and the devotee. This did not happen long ago. About 100 years ago, this incident happened. So the scholar was arguing for about something, and the devotee was not accepting it. It was something from the Shastram, whatever it was, it's not so important. But what's important is that the scholar was arguing and the devotee was arguing. Ultimately, devotee was losing. Devotee was losing the argument. So what did he do? He said, he recited one verse and told the scholar that this verse clearly says like this, and he tried to fool the scholar. He knew that he was doing the wrong thing. He knew he was doing the wrong thing. He has lost it. The argument he has lost. So he had to, he won't accept it. Ego won't allow him to accept it. So he has lost the case. So he says to the scholar that there is a verse like this, and the verse clearly says like this, what I have told you is, I'm supporting that, he said. So scholar looked at him and said, where did you get this verse from, he said. The devotee said, this verse is there in this particular one, some of the Vedic literature, so much involved. Those days people were very scholarly also. There was so many Vedic literature. So one of them he quoted, and he said, it is from that Vedic literature I have quoted this, he said. Scholar said to him, I have also studied that literature, but this verse is not there, he said. The scholar says to him, scholar won't leave because he is a learned person. He says to the devotee that I have studied that literature and this verse is not there. So our devotee got into more trouble now. To cover one mistake, he has said something. Now in order to cover that, he has to say something else. He didn't know what to say. Eventually he thought, no, the book I have studied, it's there, he said. He had to defend himself. So the only thing he could do was that he had to tell the scholar, in this particular book what I have studied, this verse is there, he said. So the scholar said, where is that book? Let me have a look at it, he said. He was very sure because he has studied that book very well. So fortunately in that temple, they had a big library in that temple. All the ancient literature, because it's an ancient temple, they used to keep all the record of all the copies. Those days you cannot get them printed. So handwritten copies, or somewhere if they find some rare copies, they'll bring them and keep in the temple library so that anyone who wants to study or take a copy, they have to come, sit in the temple and handwritten, they have to make the copy of that. This was the system in those days. So, or if someone wants to refer, they can refer it in the library. Today we have all facilities to print the books. We print, we distribute a lot, but nobody reads it. This is the sad story of the modern world. In those days, the facilities for printing and distribution was very poor. But those who read the books, they read it properly and they understood it, what is written in the book. Today it is for, the distribution is mostly centered on Lakshmi. The But in those days, Lakshmi was not the criteria. Shastram was more important. So anyway, he wanted to know, get the copy of the book. And so they managed to get the copy of the book from the temple library. They brought it. So the devotee said, look at verse 64. It's there, he said. When the scholar took up the book and opened it and looked at, the verse was there. The scholar was very, very intelligent person. What did he do? He handed over the book back to him and paid his obeisances to the devotee. He said to the devotee, I have studied Shastram, but I have not taken Krishna inside, he said. You have done that, and this is the result of that. Because he knew very well, this verse was in there in the other book what he has studied. And it was there in this book. Where did this appear? That is devotee.
Yetvaksharamanirdesham avyaktam varivasade sarvatragamajindyanja kudastam achaladruvam sanyamyendriyagramam sarvatrasamabuddhaya te prapnuvandimameva sarvabhudahideradaha.
So Krishna has a partiality towards devotee. When Krishna sees that a good devotee, a first class devotee, who is sincere, who is shraddha, who is serving him, Krishna won't let him down. When we feel let down is when we don't have Shraddha. That is where we fall down. That is when we start thinking, oh, Krishna hasn't done this to me, Krishna hasn't done that to me. But such devotees who have such sincerity and intense relationship with Krishna, they do not doubt about Krishna's position or Krishna's support to them in all these difficult conditions. So, Krishna says here that in the second verse, Krishna has spoken that the first he prefers the saguna vasana. In other words, one who worships the form. But that worship is only good as long as shraddhaya parayo vedasteme yuktadamo madaha. If it is executed with shraddha, otherwise it is no use. Then in the next two verses, Krishna says, ye tvaksharamanirdesham avyaktam varyubhasade sarvatragamachindyanja kudastamachaladruvam. So, before going to that verse, let's say this, that Krishna says there word upasana. Upasana means what? We have to realize these words are so potent with knowledge, and perfect understanding of these words will make us realize why we are lagging behind in spiritual life. Because we do not understand the weight of these words, upasana. Upasana's definition is like this. Upasanam nama, the name upasana means yatha shastram upasyasya arthasya vishayikaranena samipyam ubagamya tailadharavat samana pratyaya pradhanena dirghakalam yadasanam tadupasanam. So upasana means that, just like an example is given, when you pour oil into something, say for example you are pouring the engine oil into the crankcase of the car, how does that oil pours goes in? It's a continuous stream, isn't it? It's not like water when you pour. When you pour water, sometimes, even if you pour water, depending on the wind and all, it can keep moving, isn't it? So, the flow is not continuous when you pour water. But Taila Dharavat, Ajari Swami says, it's like Taila Dharavat. Taila Dharavat means, just like when you are pouring oil, a heavy oil, into some pot or pan, or say to the car engine or something, you see, it's a continuous flow without any break, isn't it? If your mind is attached to Krishna in that way, that is called upasana. Upasana means when the mind is completely absorbed in Krishna, not giving any opportunity to go in any direction. To such an extent, if mind is absorbed, taila dharavat, it says, just like oil, it flows into the can or to the pot. In a similar way, if the mind is constantly going towards Krishna, then it is upasana. So that is why Krishna says there, shraddhaya par etvat maya veshyamano yemam nitya yuktam upasade. Upasana is important. Why? Shraddhaya parayo vedasteme yuktadamo mada. By practicing it, one comes to that stage at the end. What comes to the at that stage at the end? Our situation, you can imagine how fallen we are in our own mind. How much our mind is absorbed in that way, in Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhakti Yoga process is easy to perform. But at the same time, how intense it has to be. Upasana has to be very, very strong. That is what Krishna is saying here. So, this process of Krishna consciousness is not something that we can take it in a very light-hearted way.
It also has to be given its importance. And the practice also has to be very, very serious. If it is taken in a casual way, without giving the importance to all these things, then that process will also give some results. But it will take a very, 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 very long, long time. That is the problem. That all these processes in Bhakti Yoga is also effective. It will start showing results as long as one takes to it very intensely. That intensity is more important. That is even important as far as the other things are concerned. Okay. For example, in the 7th chanto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Sri Narada Maharshi, how come the Kamsa and Shishubala and Dandavatra, because Yudhishthira Maharaj got this doubt in Rajasuyam sacrifice, isn't it? What happened in Rajasuyam? In Rajasuyam, Shishubala abused Krishna so much, Krishna took his Sudarshana and killed Shishubala and sent him back to the spiritual world. This caused a lot of confusion in Yudhishthira Maharaj's mind, isn't it? You know that, what happened in Rajasuyam. We discussed that before. So, what happened was that Shishubala was killed and sent back to the spiritual world. Yudhishthira Maharaj is asking Srinarada Maharshi, what is the logic in this? This Shishubala, he has not even, forget about doing performing Rajasuyam sacrifice. What has he done to Krishna? Throughout his life, he has abused him. Nothing else he has done. And you are sending him back to the spiritual world. Here I am, performing Rajasuyam. Not only that, every now and then, as soon as I get an opportunity, I serve Krishna to my capacity. And still I am here. Why is this? So in answer to that, at that time, Srinarada Maharshi says, Gopyakamal bhayal kamsa deshechaidhyadayo anrupa sambandho vrishnaya snehal yuyam bhaktya vayam vibhoho. Srinarada Maharshi says to Yudhishthira Maharaj, my dear king, you don't have to think about it too much. This Shishuvala, who is he? He has created so much enmity towards Krishna that he only used to think about Krishna and nothing else. He hated Krishna so much that he could never forget Krishna for a second. So through hate or through love, whichever way you approach Krishna, if it is not intense, the result won't be there. The result won't be there. If it is not intense, the result won't be there. Otherwise, it will just go like this, day after day after day, 16 rounds, yes, there the beats back, I'm going my way, you go your way, next day morning again the same thing, next day again the same thing. After 20 years, we'll doing the same thing again. So, this will go on. That is why Bhagavatam is teaching us that, that Gopyakamal Bhayal Kamsa, gopis came to Krishna in a lusty mood. What happened? Association with Krishna purified them to such an extent that like kamam has turned into premam, to love. Gopya kamal, similarly, what happened to Kamsa? Kamsa had bhayam. Bhayam means fear. The fear was so intense in Kamsa's mind that the fear, intensity of fear became so high that everywhere he looked he only saw Krishna. Like a self-realized soul, Kamsa was walking around in Mathura at that time. Everywhere he looked, he saw only Krishna. This is the same position the realized soul also sees at the end. He sees in every living entity Krishna's presence. Gopya kamal bhayal kamsa. Then, deshe chaityadayo anrupa. That, chedi is the Shishubala's kingdom. Shishubala has dveshyam, that hate towards Krishna. And he also got liberated. Sambandham vrishnaya snehal yuyam bhaktyavayam vibhom. That you, Pandavas, have got this relationship with Krishna, family relationship, and you have devotion. And we, through process of devotion, we have all reached Krishna. This is how Narada Muni says there. But then the question will come, if the intensity of hate, intensity of fear, intensity of lust, if they are more powerful than devotion, why not go for that? Isn't it? That question will also come. Why not I start hating Krishna from now on? Every day. I'll abuse him as soon as I come to the temple. All the swear words, I will glorify him. Hold on. I'll start telling you now. Because for sharing swear words, nobody has to teach. It comes very easily. Only when it comes to holy name, it takes a long time to struggle through, to get that chanting process. So you may think like that. No, everybody can't do that. Only those who have got the license, they can do that. All these people, Kamsa, Shishubala, Dandavatra, all of them have taken license from Krishna before they came here. That is what Bhagavatam is pointing out. We have no license for that. They have got the ticket. The ticket is there with them. With the ticket they had come here. from the spiritual world. When they came here, this ticket was given to them. And therefore, they could do that. Whereas for us, we have no ticket, nothing. We have nothing actually. What to talk about ticket? We are ticketless passengers in this train of Bhagavatam. Just got in somewhere at some point in life and not looking this side, that side. Is the examiner coming any time to check our ticket? But we have no ticket. So for those ticketless travelers, there is only one process, that is Krishna consciousness, devotional process. So this is an important thing, that the process of what it is, any process in spiritual life, unless it is serious, Shraddha. If Shraddha is not there, we are wasting our time. This has to be repeated again and again. If we try to cheat Krishna, if we try to cheat, after having understood that, the seriousness of Krishna consciousness and how to execute that, if we don't do it and still thinking that we are making progress, Krishna will cheat us. Krishna will cheat us at the end. We will be the losers. This is what we have to realize. So, that is why in the bhakti process, as you know very well, how things can change in this world, how people can change, how different understandings can come. Everything we want to suit our material life has to comfortably go on. So we want to make everything to suit our way of life, and we want to make spiritual progress also, and everything becomes a show at the end. Nothing happens. It's just nothing but a show goes on. Day after, the show will go on, but nothing will happen otherwise. So, if the goal of life, if the goal of spiritual life is to get released from the cycle of birth and death, if the goal of life is to go back home, back to Krishna, then one has to execute Krishna consciousness as Krishna is instructed in the Bhagavad Gita, which is, Shraddhaya pareyo vedaste me yuktadamo madaha yetvaksharamanirdesham avyaktam varyuvasade. Then Krishna goes on to the avyaktam. Avyaktam means the impersonal one. Krishna says there, then, sarvatrakamachindhyanja kudastamachala dhruvam. The person who is an impersonalist, that's what Krishna is talking about in the next two verses. What is the approach of an impersonalist towards him? Krishna explains that, how an impersonalist approaches him. Yetvaksharamanirdesham avyaktam varyubhasade. One who follow the letter Om or Pranavam, which were discussed in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is known as the Pranava Upasana, or Akshara Brahmam, also it is called. One who follows that road, avyaktam varyuvasade sarvatragam ajindyanja kudastam achaladruvam. Krishna says there that this is talking about the impersonalist, that Nirguna Upasana, it is called Nirguna Upasana. That this Nirguna Upasana, that for them it is a very difficult process. It's a very difficult process. This process is very difficult. Why? Avyaktam, because it's not clear what they are after. You see? They are not clear what they are after. Suppose, see, our mind, intelligence and senses is telling us, Krishna is the goal, isn't it? So when Krishna is the goal, then you can organize your mind, organize your intelligence, everything, to understand Krishna. At least you know what the goal is. Krishna is the goal. But when the goal is not clear, how will you approach? What will you do? Just like in a dark room, you say you have lost something. You are checking, you are looking for it. Put your hands here, there, everywhere. You can't find it. How will you find it? Because there is no light there. So you don't know and what you are looking for also. So it is something similar to that. Sarvatragama chindyanja kudastam achalam dhruvam. All these things come from that. Kudastam achalam dhruvam. Kudastam means, that kuda means, in the, you know, the anvil in the blacksmith's shop where he has got an anvil. So what does he do? When he wants to, a piece of metal, he wants to make a form, he puts it on the anvil and start beating. So what does the anvil do? Anvil helps the particular form to take shape because it supports on the bottom. So similarly, kodam is that anvil. Kodastam achalam dhruvam. Krishna is present in us as the Supreme Personality, as the Super Soul within us, and he is allowing us to take the particular form whichever way you want to worship. He gives Krishna's different forms. Ramachandra, Malsyam, Kormam, Varaham, Narasimham, Vamanam, Parashuram, Shriram, Lord Ramachandra, all are different forms, Krishna says, can be worshipped. It is possible to worship all these forms. All these forms have been given to us so that the devotee, according to his attachment to that particular form, can worship that form. Krishna is not objecting to that. But our unfortunate situation is, Prahlada, you have to ask Prahlada about us. Prahlada can tell you better than anybody else. In the Prahlada Stuti, Prahlada's prayers to Narasimha Murthy, Prahlada speaks some things about us. That he uses the word that that Nirvidyade Nasa Kudumbarama. Kudumbarama, he calls all of us as Kudumbarama. Not Parashurama or Sri Ram, Kudumbarama he calls us. What does this Kudumbarama means? Kudumbarama has only one business. He is not like Sri Ram or Parashurama. Kudumbarama is completely busy with family life. That is Kudumbarama's business. And that is how Prahlada Maharaj calls us in the Bhagavatam. One who is completely absorbed in family life and that's only business. He considers that as the only business. Nirvidyadena sa Kudumbarama. So, in the, coming back to this, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying there, Sarvatranga Jindyanja Kudastamajala Dhruvam Saniyam Yendriya Gramam Sarvatra Samabuddhaya Te Pratnivandi Mame Eva Sarvabhodahide Radaha. That Saniyam Yendriya Gramam, that all the senses, knowledge of senses and senses of knowledge and sense of action, all of them are under complete control. This is talking about the impersonalist. He keeps them under complete control. Then, Sarvatra Samabuddhaya, an equal mind towards every other living entity. What does this equal mind mean? Equal mind means to know that every living entity is a part of Krishna. Is a part of Krishna. If that realization is there, the attachment or aversion to another living entity goes away. It's a part of the process, what they follow. That they do not consider somebody as their friend, nor do they consider someone as their enemy either. Reason being that they have already come to the understanding that from Shastram they have understood. They have understood this under Shastram in such a way that they have realized it, that they cannot afford to think enemically towards anyone, nor are they friendly to anybody. That is Samabuddhi. Samabuddhi means equal relationship to friend or anyone in this world. That's what Krishna is saying there. Sarvatra samabuddhaya te pratnivandi mameva sarvabhudahide radaha. That sarvabhudahide radha. That means a person who has the welfare of all the other living entities in the mind. Krishna is talking about impersonalists now, not about the devotees. He's talking about the impersonals. Sarvabhudahide radaha. That these two verses particularly, Krishna is saying, one who is following that, Etrukshramanirdesham avyaktam baryuvasade, ones who are worshipping me through that avyaktam process, or the impersonal process, sarvatragama chindyanja kodastam ajalam dhruvam. Kodastam ajalam dhruvam, Krishna says like that. So, here, some few things we have to realize it, in the sense, that when Krishna is referring to kodastam ajalam dhruvam and sarvatragamam chindyancha kodastam ajalam dhruvam, all these things, we may wonder why Krishna has infected all the, Krishna has put forward all these things to them. Reason being, in their process, first of all they purify themselves through the knowledge from the Shastram. Just like I mentioned before, that the worship of a form is necessary for us because mind, intelligence and senses cannot comprehend the truth. Absolute truth we cannot understand. Manovachama gojaram, that is how it is spoken about, that the absolute truth is cannot be understood by the mind, by the words or by the vision, by the senses. We cannot perceive that. So therefore we need a form of Krishna to be worshipped. We need that form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to go through that. Sarvatragama chindyanja kodastam ajalam dhruvam. So, when we worship this form, just like I mentioned before, that in Bhagavatam particularly you will notice, throughout Bhagavatam from different devotees, what is known as the Stuti. Stuti means glorification of the Supreme Lord. Akrura is doing that, Uddhava is doing that, Gopis are doing that, And Kunti Devi is doing that, Bhishma is doing that, Dhruva is doing that. Everyone, all the great devotees, you will find, as soon as they realize Krishna, there is a glorification, isn't it? You will find in the Bhagavatam, Kunti Stuti, Bhishma Stuti, Dhruva Stuti, Prahlada Stuti, Ambarisha Stuti, Vritrasura Stuti, they are all Stuti, glories after glory, one after the other. Where is this coming from? We sometimes think, when we read all Bhagavatam and all, sometimes people ask this question also. You see, it's so cheap that Krishna, you can just stand there and recite a few verses and he gets attracted by your words and he accepts you like that. Or a devotee only has to glorify him a few minutes. No, it's more than that. If you understand the principle behind this glorification. In normal day-to-day life also in this world, we are also glorifying people all the time, isn't it? We are also glorifying people. For example, you meet someone, a friend of yours, and he has his birthday. What do you say to him? Happy birthday, isn't it? That's a stuti. That's nothing but a glorification of him. Otherwise, I can as well think, let him have his birthday. What do I have to care for, isn't it? If he is having his birthday, what do I got to do with it? That approach also I can take. But you don't do that. Why do you say to him, happy birthday? So that it pleases him. That is stuti. That is the Bhagavatam also is like that. Everything. When you travel to somewhere, you drop somebody at the airport, and then what do you say to him? Happy journey, or happy good flight, or whatever. Something, you say something nice to him, so that you leave him in a good way. Isn't it? This is all stuti. But when it comes to Bhagavatam, people say, oh, why is it necessary? In every day they are doing it, day after day with friends and relatives and everyone. They have no problem in saying that. When you see the morning, you see the boss in the office in the morning, even if you don't like him, you still say good morning to him. Is it not? So it is normal. Why? Still, because you want to start the day in a good mood, in a good tone. Sometimes bosses don't react, even then still you say to him. So this stuti or this glorification is a part of the life that you can't take out. So similarly, for devotees who have seen Krishna, they cannot keep quiet. It's not possible. After seeing Krishna, and when the relationship has become stronger, they cannot stay quiet. And that comes out in the form of this glorification. It is not that something Vedavyasa has written, oh, let me think what Akura was thinking about at that time, and start writing a few verses, like the modern novelists do when they write the stories. It was not spoken like that. That is what you must remember. These are things which are, because every glorification, Akura's is different from Kunti's. Kunti's is different from Bhishma's. Bhishma's is different from Dhruva's. Dhruva's is different from Prahlada's. So every stuti, when you take and analyze it, you will notice that they all have something to say to Krishna from their own practical experiences, isn't it? So that happiness what they have experienced when they have come to see Krishna face to face, they had to say this to him. When Narasimha Murti appeared in front of Prahlada, when Brahma and Lakshmi Devi all failed to please Narasimha Murti, Prahlada succeeded. Simply by that 40 or 50 verses what Prahlada has spoken there. Prahlada Stuti in the Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the most prominent glorification of Krishna. Brahma Stuti in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, another most important glorification of Krishna. So through these devotees, you can understand the devotee's relationship with Krishna. That is why it is so important to know. So these things, like as I mentioned before, worship of the deity is nothing but a medium through which to approach Krishna. So you can't avoid, without that medium it is not possible. It is not possible. Why? Because we have a limited mind, intelligence and senses. We have nothing else in our hand to understand the truth. So therefore, knowing very well our situation, the great acharyas have instituted this process of deity worship. And this did not exist in the past. This is also you have to remember. In Satyugam, there was no need for that. Why? Their mind was so pure. The mode of goodness was so high in them, number one. Number two, they had no other goal in life except to realize the truth. So the personality whom we are comparing today with someone who has lived in the time of Satyugam is so different by their own capacity in worship. The capacity of a person in Satyugam is so high that his mind was not disturbed like the persons of the Kaliyugam. Kaliyugam, we have seen in the Bhagavatam in the beginning, why did Vedavyasa say it like that? Mandasya manda prajnasya vai o manda ayushasya vai nidraya hriyade naktam divaja vyartha karma bhi. This is Bhagavatam says about us. In the beginning of Bhagavatam, Vedavyas says this. So, as the time went on from Satyugam to Kaliyugam, people also started losing their strength of worship. The strength for worship also they lost. So, coming down to Tredayugam, they lost further, but they were able to perform sacrifices, Yajanam. They could perform big, big sacrifices and please Krishna. When it came to Dwabaram, they lost that strength also. They could only do was, they could, Dwabare Paricharyayam, the deity worship necessity has arrived. So, the temple started springing up everywhere. That is how temple worship has started. And Kalaotad Hari Kirtanal, and in when the time we came to Kaliyugam, even temple worship has become impossible. Only all, because as I mentioned before, Anagada Pranam, only by eating very well, sumptuous prasadam, inside once it goes in, only then some holy name will come out from inside. Otherwise it won't even come out. So this is the situation of the Kaliyugam. So according to the time, according to the circumstances, the acharyas have instituted different processes of worship. When you think about what Prahlada has done or what Dhruva has done, please do not compare ourselves and start doing that tomorrow and see if it works out. It won't work out. It won't happen also. What Prahlada did or what Dhruva has done, that is beyond our capacity in the present body. So, here, coming back to this, Krishna is saying here, Sarvatra gama chindyanja kudastam achalam dhruvam. That is what Krishna is saying. That we having got, what does he say there? Sarvatra samyam nendriya gramam sarvatra samabuddhaya te prapnu vandimam eva sarvabhudahideradaha. All these things, what is discussed in these two verses, are the minimum requirement for an impersonalist who wants to advance on the spiritual path. What are they? Yetukshram anirdesham, anirdesham. Avyaktam pariupasade sarvatragama jindyamja kudastam achalam dhruvam. Then, sanyam nendriya gramam sarvatra samabuddhaya te praapnuvandimam eva sarvabhudahideradaha. That word sarvabhudahideradha, that is the most important thing. Why it is sarvabhudahideradha? That only if one comes to the understanding that all the living entities in this world, no matter who it is, not only human society, birds, bees, and every level, one has to come to see that he will not act against their interests. Against their interests. That situation has to happen. Today, our activities are not, it's for our interest we execute our work in this world, isn't it? But you can see the difficulty when it comes to impersonalist process, where the difficulty comes. Difficulty comes here, sarvabhuta hide radha. How can we say that we are sarvabhuta hide radha? Theoretically we can say, oh, I have not done any harm to anybody. But look at the world. So many things goes on in this world, which are difficult to understand how people could engage. Because the selfishness goes to such an extent that becomes the priority. Every living entity wants to defend himself. And in the process of defending, as long as this mentality of defending nature is strong in one, sarvabhuta hideradha won't happen. Because there is always threat from some corner or the other. In some form it will come. So, this process is very difficult. Sarvabhuta hideradha. For example, if you look in this world itself, take for example, ivory. Ivory is a very expensive thing, isn't it? People are very fond of ivory. People are very fond of ivory. So, ivory is a very expensive thing. So, in order to get the ivory, they have to kill the elephants, isn't it? In big, big forests, elephants are killed just for the sake of ivory, because it's so expensive. It's so expensive. I don't know whether you have noticed how they kill these elephants. How they kill these elephants. It is done in the most cruel way you can think about. After they shoot the elephant, the elephant falls down and dies. When the elephant dies, these people who are called called poachers, isn't it? Who poaches in the forest. And they go to this elephant and they don't want the whole elephant's body. Only they want the trunk. Only the tusk they want from the elephant. But they know the tusk is nothing but a teeth, but long two teeth, isn't it? But this tusk, most of it goes inside. Only a part of it is outside. It goes right deep into the body inside. So what do they do? While dying, this elephant will be thirsty for water. Will be thirsty for water. Every living entity, when it leaves the body, it needs to drink water. That is the nature's arrangement is like that. So, when the elephant is dying, immediately it doesn't die, it takes time to leave the body. By then he is prepared. What does he do? He takes this lime, you know, which they use for whitewashing the walls and all that. In the olden days, that's what they were using, a kind of lime, which they will use for whitewashing. It's a kind of a chemical, which if poured with hot water, it will burn the whole thing. So when the elephant opens the mouth like this, they put this burning lime into the mouth. As soon as they put it into the mouth, what happens is, it's just like boiled banana, it becomes this teeth. You can just pull it out from inside. That poor elephant has to leave the body in this agony. In few minutes, everything is finished. He can get the whole tusks from the mouth. You can just pull it out like a in a, such an easy way. Otherwise, it takes a lot of work to kill and to break the whole thing and pull it out from inside. It won't come easily. So these are methods they have developed to our human so-called human society has developed to get the ivory. What do you think about that? Sarva bhuta hite radah. Krishna is saying that a person who has some wants to make progress on the spiritual path and through this impersonal process, that is the first qualification. Sarva bhuta hite radah. Again, so many examples. These are all in the newspapers and different instances you will read, different ways they are caught and how they do things. There is a particular kind of hat. They make it some kind of wool they get from the sheep. Apparently how they take it out from the sheep is, when a pregnant sheep, when it is fully pregnant, they take the sheep to the top of a hill and roll it down from there and force it to die. When it dies, they take out the baby from inside, and from that baby's body they take out that feather or whatever that is, and make wool and make the hat out of that. And there's a lot of demand for that in this world. So, sarva bhuta hite radah. Krishna is saying here, yetokshramanir desham avyaktam paryubhasade sarvatragama chindyanja kudastam achalam dhruvam saniyam indriyagramam sarvatra samabuddhaya te praptivandimam eva sarva bhuta hite radah. So unless one has gone beyond all these things, that means coming to spiritual life means all these basic things have to go from life. Profiteering and making money, all these different ideas has to go away from the mind. Only then it is possible, Krishna says, to do these things. Then avyaktam sarvatragam achindyam kudastam achalam dhruvam. All these things. Kuda means one which has no change. Takes the same form. Now, there you will notice a word, achalam. Achalam means what? Achalam means one who cannot move. Why did Krishna use that? Can you imagine? Krishna cannot move. He has to stay in one place. People often ask this, how come your God is like this? Achalam, he cannot move. That is the question. It's a good question to ask that question. Why Krishna cannot move? Sometimes people say, your Lord is lying down on a bed all the time as though he has got some paralysis or something. That he can't even get up from the bed. Talking about Mahavishnu, lying down in the ocean on top of Adishesha. He's lying down like this. Can he not stand up? At least your God cannot stand up. Does he have to lie down like this? They say. No, the reason is this. That this word achalam is covering all that question. Achalam means he cannot move any more further because he is present everywhere. If somebody is present in everywhere and everything, where can we move any more further? Everything that exists is only him, nothing else. So where is the question of moving anywhere? He is not limited by space, he is not limited by time. And because it is like that, Krishna is referred to as achalam here. That he cannot go beyond than that. He is completely all-pervading, in other words. Just like in the ocean, you have the salt in the ocean, isn't it? The salt is all pervading with the water. Who gave that all pervasiveness? The water has provided the all pervasiveness of the salt. in the salt water in the ocean. Similarly, Krishna is all pervading. Krishna is all pervading. So, there is no question of chalam. He is achalam. He cannot move anymore after that. Then, so, in the previous first verse, Krishna talked about the form of worship, temple worship, and then in this last two verses, Krishna spoke about the impersonal form. Krishna says there that it is a very difficult process to follow. That because we only have experience of the matter within this world. We have no knowledge beyond than that. Therefore, no matter whatever it is in this present world, and we will not be able to understand the impersonal Brahman easily. And we cannot understand the true nature. Therefore, when we refer to Brahman, how do we say that impersonal is called this, not this, not this, not this? They don't say what it is. Why? Because they don't know what it is. That's what it is. So, within our mind and within our understanding, we cannot bring it down. That is the impersonal form. So, when does it change? When, with proper studying of the Shastram, and when one continuously performs spiritual activities, in due course, one gets rid of his sinful activities and his piousness increases. Rajogunam and Tamogunam go away and Sattugunam builds up in him. And at that time, he will come to a superior understanding that material world is nothing but a place of misery. And when he comes to that understanding, he will be able to execute spiritual life on the impersonal platform. Generally for impersonalists, there are different qualifications mentioned. Their acharyas insist on that. If you have no qualifications, don't come to the impersonal route. They say like that. What are they? First thing, nityanitya vastu vivegam, a strong ability to discriminate between the permanent and the temporary. That's what they call it. Atman atma vivegam, it is called. So, unlike the personalist, the impersonal form begins with certain qualifications. If you do not have those qualifications, and if you take to the impersonal worship, you are bound to fail. You will not make any progress at all. And first thing what they insist on is this nityanitya vastu vivegam, the quality to discriminate between temporary and permanent, which means that permanent thing is only the spirit, temporary thing is the matter. You know, one should be able to reject everything in relationship with matter. No materialistic life, no materialistic activities, nothing. Completely fixed up in spiritual path. That is the first requirement. Only when one is fully convinced on that, and he is able to discriminate at every step in life, that spirit soul I have nothing to do with matter. And when one is formed, his mind and intelligence in that way, convinced and acts on that platform, only then he can enter into the impersonal worship. Number one. Number two, Ihamutra bhala bhoga viragam, it says. What does it mean? It means that complete renunciation of all kinds of desires in this world. Ihamutra bhala bhoga viragam. That means no desire for any results from, I have nothing to get from this world. That strong conviction in one's mind. Only if you want something from this world, you have to have some concern about anything in this world, isn't it? Why are we all so concerned about many things in this world? Why? Because we want so many things from this world. The desire is so strong inside. And as long as this desire is there, they say don't come to this process, impersonal process. It will not work. So, their four qualifications or four requirements are, one, this complete discrimination between matter and spirit throughout the process. Secondly, complete detachment from everything. No desire for any results. I have nothing to gain from this world. Complete conviction in this world and living in that mood in this world. Then what else? Shama damadi shal sambati. Shamam damam tidipsha uparadi shraddha samadhanam. There are six things requested. Shama means complete control of the senses. Dhamma means complete control of the mind. Tidiksha, to tolerate everything in this world, no matter what happens. Uparadi, able to absorb the mind in the goal. Shraddha, Uparadi, Shraddha, Samadhanam. Shraddha means, don't have to explain anymore what Shraddha means. Shastrasya, Guruvakyasya, Satyabuddhyavadharana, Dasa, Shraddha, it says. Shastram and Guruvakyam, Shastram as well as the Guruvakyam, spiritual master's instructions, absolute faith in that. Satyabuddhi, that means no doubts about it. Not like us, all the time doubting, is this all true what Krishna says? Or is Krishna true first of all? In this way, this is our, we are not qualified for that. With this understanding, if you go to Bhagavad Gita and start follow the impersonal route, we'll bound to fail. So, Shastrasya Guruvakyasya Satya Budhyavara. That Shraddha, Uparadhi Shraddha, and then ultimately Samadhanam. Samadhanam means, after understanding the truth, and ability to hold on to that, without losing from that. So, these are the basic principles, what they say, you should have before you come to this process of impersonal worship, impersonal approach. For them, temple worship is not necessary. For them, temple worship is not necessary. But what is happening now? Look at the difficulty. They have come to this process, they have taken to these four principles. As long as one is fully situated in these four regulations, that is their four regulative principles for them. Like we say, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. These four are their regulative principles. What are they? Nityanitya Vastu Vivekam, Ihamutra Bhala Bhoga Viragam, and Shamadamani Shanul Sampatti. And what is the fourth one? Fourth one is the most difficult one. And that is what is the biggest drawback in us. What is that? Mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam means an intense desire to get out of the material world. To get out of this material world. An intense desire. Mumukshatva means once for all, wants to close the show in this world and go back home, back to Krishna. So that is called mumukshatva. So long as these four principles are there, then Krishna says he can come back to the impersonal worship. So now you can see where we are, isn't it? We can see. Our mumukshatva, better not to discuss it, how serious we are to going back home, back to Godhead. First of all, at the moment our relationship with Krishna is such, if Krishna can help me in my projects, what I have in my mind, till I leave this body, then at the time of death, if you take me back to spiritual world, I am willing to come with you. That is at the moment, my feeling is, I don't know, but maybe many of you may be a different feeling. But most of us have this difficulty, in that difficulty to write off this material world, that is very strong in us. We are not able to give up this because it's very real for us still, this material world. We have not come to understand that it is temporary. Although spiritually we may call sometimes it's temporary, and all the attachment to this world through family, children, wife, this, that, house, job, all kinds of things which we are caught up in that. So as long as all these things are manifesting in front of us as real, impersonal worship you can leave that. We have to come through the personal form. There is no other way. That's the only way left. Now, after speaking all these things, first what happened? Arjuna asked a question. Who is superior? Personalist or impersonalist? Krishna answered straight away, immediate answer. Personalist is superior. Soon after that, Krishna says, personalist is superior. But process what the impersonalists follow is like this. Etyaksharamanirdesham avyaktam vairiva asade sarvatragamachindyanja kudastamajaladruvam saniyamendriyagramam sarvatra samabuddhaya te praapnuvandimameva sarvabhudahideredaha. This is the process. Why did Krishna talk about that process right away? That's a question, isn't it? Krishna said, the impersonalist is dearer to me, is the better process. Immediately Krishna says, straight after that, the impersonal process is like this. Now, when Krishna said that, we have to understand from that, it is not for everybody. That process is not for everybody. Why? That is what Krishna talks in the next verse. Klesho adhigadarastesham avyakta asakta chedasam avyakta hi gadir dukham dehavadhiravapyadem. Krishna says, klesho adhigadarastesham. This impersonal process is very, very, very difficult. And that difficulty Krishna spoke first. And then Krishna says, klesho adhikadarastesham. Why? Avyakta sakta chedasam. The mind won't get attracted to that impersonal form. That is the difficulty. How can we get attracted to an impersonal aspect of the Supreme Lord? Why? Avyakta hi gadir dukham dehavadhiravapyade. It is very, very difficult because you are in the bodily concept of life. That is the problem. So, sagunam, nirgunam, two processes. Krishna says, sagunam is good, nirgunam is also a process. You can come back to me through that. But, so long as one is in the bodily concept of life, one who identifies himself with the body, one which means me, mine, my family, my this, my that, and so many other things. And thinking I am this body. As long as one is in that concept, one has no choice except to come to the saguna form or the worship the personal form of Krishna. This is the conclusion from that. Klesho adhikadarastesham avyakta sakta chedasam avyakta ahigadir dukham dehava adhiravapyade. That dehava adhiravapyade is the most important word there. That as long as one is in the bodily concept of life, one is controlled by, limited by the mind, senses, intelligence, and all the conditioning and identification with the body, he has no freedom to come to the impersonal form of worship of Krishna. So, Krishna is not rejecting impersonalists. What Krishna is saying here, majority of the people have no choice except to come through the saguna form or the form of Krishna. Worship Krishna through the form and start the process. So now you can see 99.9999% will fall, have to come through the personal form. And that is why Krishna says that it is the better process. Because it applies to majority, naturally that is the better process, isn't it? Because it is not in any other angle. The goal ultimately who reaches there is the same. But those who are, Krishna says there, avyakta higadar dukham dehava adhiravapyade. One who has gone into the bodily concept of life, he has no hope except to come through the personal form of Krishna. He has no other choice he has except to come through the personal form of Krishna. Krishna has not rejected either personalists or impersonalists. They are both comes from the same tradition. Vedic literatures are the authority, great sages. Many of them are impersonalists, many of them are personalists. Great, great devotees. They are both from the same tradition. They come. But they go through different processes. One who has got the four strengths of strong clear conviction in his own mind between this matter and the spirit, and one who has total detachment from this world, and one who has the all the requisite qualifications of control of mind, senses, etc., etc., and one who has such intense desire for liberation, and such a person can come to the impersonal worship. But on the other hand, this process of sagunam or the form, worship of form of Krishna is an easy process open to all. Anyone and everyone can come to that. That's the beauty of the process of Krishna consciousness. So from this you can see, in this particular chapter, Krishna has also thrown at us one important point, that there is no need to inquire too long a time whether this process or that process. It's very clear that all of us, almost all, will fall into this category of worshipping the deity at the temple. He has no other choice. And in order for that, the great authorities, spiritual authorities, great acharyas, they establish temples, temple worship, and opportunity for the devotees to relate with Krishna in that way. Otherwise, it's not possible. Having read through Bhagavad Gita, you can see, up to this time, in 11 chapters, Krishna has not spoken about deity worship at all. Krishna has not even spoken about deity worship. It's only here in the 12th chapter, Krishna has brought up this topic and why it is so important. Then, after this, then, what is bhakti? Isn't it? Klesho adhigadaraste sham avyakta asakta jayadasam avyakta ahigadar dukham dehava adhirava apyadem. Then, the sagunam and nirgunam, that is sagunam worship and nirgunam worship, that were the two processes we spoke about. Sagunam means premam, premam means love for Krishna. Nirgunam means jnanam, jnanam means knowledge of Krishna. That through the process of knowledge they approach, and through the process of love we approach Krishna. That is only the difference, one through the process of love and the other one through the process of knowledge. That is how we approach Krishna. That now, this process, when we are concerned about the sagunam, we are not concerned about nirgunam. That is not practical, and that is no point in discussing it also too much. But as long as we understand that sagunam and nirgunam are both bona fide processes, but sagunam is the process practical for almost all the people in the human society, especially in the age of Kali. In Satyugam, Things are a little different. People had the capacity to meditate. And they had all these qualities, what we called as the regulative principles of the impersonalist. They were available without any endeavor for it. They all had all that qualities in them. Whereas Kali Yuga, we have all these qualities, you have to define everything very clearly. Just like for devotees, we have to say clearly, no meat eating. Then also they are asking, why no meat eating? Can we not eat one day a week or something like that? All this is the quality of the Kali Yuga population. Similarly, we also say that no illicit sex. So then they will say, oh, what is that restriction? How far we have to apply that into our life? So is it possible? So when you, if you read the standard what Prabhupada has instituted, many devotees have left straight away. This is impossible, they said. So that is how it is, that this is our status today. In the age of Kali, we are like that. Everything has to be told, and it has to be defined very clearly, and it has to be laid out very much on a paper. Otherwise, you may even forget these four principles, what we are. And so, this is our Kali Yuga mind and Kali Yuga intelligence. And to those people, we are telling them, take the impersonal worship. How it is going to work? So, that question doesn't arise. Now we'll go back to the personal worship. What is personal worship? Best way to understand personal worship is, the easiest and the most comprehensive way of presented is in the Bhagavadam in the 7th canto. And who is that great devotee who done that? Prahlada. Prahlada says how to approach, engage in deity worship. Shravanam kirtanam vishnor smaranam padasevanam archanam mandanam dasyam sakhyam atmanivedanam. There are 9 processes of devotional service, isn't it? These are the 9 processes which are expanded by different devotees in different forms. You have so many examples in the Bhagavadam. Different devotees taking to different process. Parikshit was fond of hearing Shravanam. That was his process, isn't it? If you remember, Parikshit was only by hearing he got liberated and went back to the spiritual world. That was Parikshit's capacity. Kirtanam Vishnor Smaranam. Kirtanam, who was doing? Sudeva Goswami is the best example for Kirtanam. Kirtanam. Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. Then there are personalities for other processes also. For example, Mahabali was given the best example for Atmanivedanam. Surrendering everything to Krishna. That was Mahabali's greatest quality. And Sakhyam. Arjuna is considered to be Sakhyam. The relationship with Arjuna and Krishna is Sakhyam. And similarly, Dasyam. Prahlada is Dasyam. Lakshmi Devi is Dasyam, isn't it? So like this, there are examples in the Bhagavadam for every processes of devotional service, Krishna consciousness. Now, if you look at all these 9 processes, Shastra's Narada Bhakti Sutram will discuss these things in detail. Narada Bhakti Sutram gives a much more detailed version of all bhakti means, how bhakti can be developed technically, how to approach Krishna. What we call as bhakti in this world, approaching Krishna for material benefits, or satisfying our material needs, or fulfilling our material desires, Shastram does not accept it as bhakti. It is considered to be a business. It's considered to be a business. That's why I'm saying that as long as the service to Krishna is without any motivation, without any receiving any results from that activity, that service is not devotional service. It is purely business. It's purely business. Shastras are very clearly defining that. And who else? Who has defined? Prahlada has defined. His spiritual master Narada Maharshi has defined. And so many others have spoken about it in the same way. So if you are following the Shastram of Bhakti, which is Narada Bhakti Sutram, Narada Bhakti Sutram very defines clearly what each process means. Let us start with Shravanam. Shravanam means hearing. Kirtanam means whatever you have heard, you glorify that. That is Kirtanam. Sometimes people misunderstand that if I make a musical concert with the holy name, only then it is Kirtanam. That is not alone Kirtanam. That may be Kirtanam. Because even while Kirtanam, if it is not bringing memories of Krishna, rather than it becomes a musical concert, then it is not Kirtanam. It becomes only Kirtanam if it is bringing Krishna's memories in the mind from that. The holy name also, if it is chanted, purely for the sake of purely for the sake of a musical enjoyment, then it is not kirtanam. Kirtanam it becomes only when you glorify Krishna with wholeheartedly, and that glorification should come from the heart and not from the lips. So shravanam kirtanam, if one has heard properly shravanam, if it has heard properly, then naturally the tendency will be to glorify. Kirtanam will come from that person. If he has heard properly, he cannot avoid. So normally in life, after many years of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, what happens is a tendency develops inside automatically to speak about Krishna. It will naturally come. You can't avoid that because you heard about Krishna so much, you cannot keep quiet anymore. If ever you have to speak something, it has to be about Krishna. That is kirtanam. And that shravanam, which has come through kirtanam, after some time, it comes to a stage that kirtanam and shravanam starts coming inside so strongly that you cannot forget Krishna anymore. And that is the smaranam. So three things, shravanam, kirtanam and smaranam goes together. It is difficult that whole lifetime you have been hearing, but there was no kirtanam or there was no smaranam. That won't happen. It is bound to happen. When Sukadeva Goswami was talking to Parikshit, often Parikshit will ask questions to Sukadeva Goswami in the Bhagavatam. And those questions were coming up from the Shravanam what he had. That Shravanam was coming out in the form of Kirtanam from him. 10th canto, if you take it, 10th canto and start reading, the first chapter itself, you will see how does Parikshit says that. Parikshit begins that chapter like that. He says there to Parikshit Sukadeva Goswami like this, I have heard about Krishna. Tell me about him more now. And he says that Kathayo Vamshavistaram. Talk to me, Vamshavistaram, about the descendants of Soma Suryayoho, Chandra Vamsham and Surya Vamsham, Lunar Dynasty and the Solar Dynasty. I would like to hear more and more about that. That is Kirtanam from Parikshit. And in relation with that, when Sukadeva Goswami answers that, it is working as in the form of smaranam in Parikshit's mind. But it is predominated by shravanam. Bhagavatam is predominated by shravanam from Parikshit. Parikshit is hearing everything. So, at the end of Bhagavatam, when Parikshit was ready to go back to the spiritual world, Sukadeva Goswami realized that it was time for him to leave. Time for him to leave. On the seventh day, when Parikshit has heard Bhagavatam, it was almost middle of the day when he realized that Parikshit has now heard everything what he had to hear. Far away from the crowd, Sukadeva Goswami could see Takshaka was approaching quietly. He was dressed up like a Brahmana and he was coming towards Parikshit. And Sukadeva Goswami with his vision, Jnana Drishti, what he calls as Jnana Drishti, he knew what was going on, who was approaching. And so he decided, before Takshaka comes to Parikshit, he had to conclude the Srimad Bhagavatam there. So eventually he says to Parikshit that, close your eyes, he says to Parikshit. Parikshit closes his eyes. Meanwhile, Sukadeva Goswami arranged to bring a plate or a tray for worshipping the spiritual master. He brought it and kept it near Parikshit. He says to Parikshit, close your eyes, he says to Parikshit. Asked Parikshit, what do you see now? Parikshit says, I see you there. I see you there. In other words, Parikshit was so much in absorption of the thoughts of Sukadeva Goswami, who had given him. You have to read that fifth chapter in the 12th canto to get that final instructions from Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami is saying to Parikshit what is called as Brahmavadesham. Brahmavadesham means the final words from Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit. As soon as those words were heard by Parikshit, he was liberated. This is the power of the spiritual master who just spoke to him a few words and with that he was liberated. Up to this time he heard Srimad Bhagavatam. But eventually he had this Brahmavadesham as it is called. The chapter is called Brahmavadesham. And when this advice, when this upadesham or instruction was given to Parikshit, Parikshit has heard that, and it is after that this discussion happens between Krishna, Sudev Goswami and Parikshit. Sudev Goswami says to Parikshit, what do you see now? He says, I only see you. What else do you see? He says. Then Parikshit says, I see you offering your prayers to Krishna. And he sees Krishna, he sees Sudev Goswami. And at that time, the arati was performed to Sudev Goswami by Parikshit. While the arati is being performed, Sudev Goswami walked out from there. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam finishes. You don't know where he has gone. Nobody knew where he has gone. None of the sages who were present there knew where he has gone. This is the personality Sudev Goswami. Came there, spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, finished the business, sent Parikshit back to spiritual world. As soon as Sudev Goswami left, Parikshit fell down there and left his body. And it is only after that, Takshaka comes and touches him. By then, Parikshit was already in the spiritual world. Sudeva Goswami, in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, that when the discussion started, Sudeva Goswami says to Parikshit, you still have 7 days time, why do you lament? Just see that spiritual master Sudeva Goswami, who can tell you, you still have 7 days time, I'll take care of the rest. That is what Sudeva Goswami said to Parikshit. You still have 7 days time, why do you worry? So in 7 days time, I will talk to you about Krishna. And that will, Ashatvalam Gayata Vishnu Ghada. Then tell me about Krishna. Parikshit wanted to hear about Krishna. And when Sudeva Goswami realized he is the right personality who can hear Bhagavatam and enjoy and relish that, he spoke accordingly to the Parikshit. So the great speaker and the great listener, the two things together. And that was the result. Parikshit goes back to the spiritual world. So, coming back to this, 9 processes of devotional service, starting with Shravanam. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnor Smaranam, Vishnor Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. So, these 9 processes, what is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj explains this to his friends, that these are the places one should approach Krishna. Then, Parama Prema Rupaha. So, why it is all spoken in this way in the Bhagavatam? We think that, it was spoken by Parikshit, spoken to Parikshit. You have got 7 days time. Strictly speaking, we also have got only 7 days. Isn't it? Think about it this way. Every week has got only 7 days. Isn't it? Every week has only 7 days. So, strictly speaking, we also have 7 days. So, it can be in one of these days only, Sunday to Saturday. In one of these, we have to leave. In whichever condition, wherever, only thing is, may not happen this week, it may happen next week. But ultimately, that 7 days applies to us as well. That is a warning through Bhagavatam from the side of, from when Sringi cursed Parikshit that you have only 7 days to leave. The commentators on Bhagavatam are saying, that 7 days applies to us as well in one way. Because if we take that seriously, that it's only, we have to also live on that consciousness that we also have only 7 days to live. That is our understanding also. Secondly, Sringi cursed Parikshit for what? Parikshit did a big blunder. What was that? He took a dead body of a snake and put it around the neck of his father, isn't it? Shamika Rishi. Shamika Rishi was in meditation of the truth, absolute truth. He was in meditation. So, what did he do? Parikshit went there, took out this dead snake, thrown it around Shamika Rishi's neck and left there. Isn't it? What Parikshit has actually done is actually what we are also doing. Actually, it is not much different. Why do we say like that? The reason is this. A dead thing he has put across Shamika Rishi's neck, isn't it? A dead snake he has put on there. Dead thing is called Jadam. And the living entity is spirit, isn't it? The Jadam, dead matter, is Jadam. Living entity is spirit. What are we doing in this world? Not knowing our real identity, we are also worshipping this dead body, which is going to die one day, made of matter, and actually we have covered our soul, which is our real identity, with this dead matter, by our karma. The karma has given us this dead material body, isn't it? So strictly, what Parikshit has done, that activity, is exactly what we are also doing. We are generating more and more material bodies for ourselves by our activities. Karma means creating more and more material bodies. So this activity of us is not much different than what Parikshit has done to Shamika Rishi when he threw the dead snake around his neck. What we are doing is also creating more and more material bodies again around the spirit soul, which is our original identity. What are the things that is covering the spirit soul? That's a good question, isn't it? The spirit soul is covered by few things. Kunti Devi explains in his prayers, in her prayers, avidya kama karma bhi, avidya kamam karmam. Three things are the ones which are covering the soul. Avidya means ignorance. From ignorance comes everything. Ignorance is what? Thinking I am this body. It started everything from there. The moment that conception is in our mind, fixed up, then from all activities that follow after that is also from ignorance. Because avidya, kamam, karmam. Kunti Devi calls it like that. Kama means material desires. So much from avidya comes material desires. From ignorance comes material desires. From material desires comes action immediately, karmam. So avidya binds us. Kamam, material desires binds us, karmam binds us. How does karmam binds us? Karmam creates vasanas. So vasanas is also there with them. Avidya, kamam, karmam, vasana. These are the four things which is actually creates a sheath around the soul. The soul in its pure form is Krishna's part and parcel. It has to experience the same Satchitan Anandam, eternality, blissfulness and knowledge, which is Krishna's quality, pure quality. Oh, those pure things are in us also, but we don't experience any of them. Why? Because of these few things around the soul. And that is what it makes it a jiva. Jiva becomes a part and parcel of Krishna, who is spiritual by nature, becomes a jiva when it is confronted with all these four things. And it is these four things, avidya, kamam, karmam and vasanas, that is what we are trying to eliminate or get rid of from our jiva, and that is what is called liberation. So liberation happens to a living entity when one it is released from this bondage, avidya, kamam, karmam and vasanas. So that process is come through bhakti. Bhakti helps us to get to that stage. So here Krishna says here that klesho adhikadarastesham avyakta asakta cheyadasam avyakta ahigadir dukham dehavadhiravapyade. Dehavadhiravapyade. As long as one is in this bodily concept of life, identification with the body is there, forget about impersonal approach. You can leave that there. But if you have managed to come out of all that, then you can try. There is no one stopping from that. But more majority of the people will never be able to do it. Will never be able to do it. So Krishna says here that the approach of Krishna from now onwards, after this, in many, many verses from now, Krishna, what he does is, he start doing something different. Very simply, Krishna answered the first question. Arjuna's question was answered. After answering the question, Krishna says, Yedu sarvani karmani mai sanyasam alpare. Krishna says, Ananyanava yogena mam dhyayanta upasade. This is the verse 6 and 7. Two more verses, Krishna talks about it. What does he say, sir? Then, the Yedu sarvani karmani mai sanyasam alpare. Ananyanava yogena mam dhyayanta upasade. So just before, Krishna said that it is very difficult to come through the impersonal route. It is not practically impossible for most of the people. It cannot be done. So forget about that. When the acharyas instituted temple worship in the beginning, temple worship was very simple. Today we have a different understanding of temple worship. In the olden days, what it was the deity was there in the stone form and a lamp was burning next to the deity. And some flowers were offered to the deity. So the temple was left open. Anytime anyone could come, make the offering, worship the deity. That was the system in the beginning. But after some time what happened? We started thinking, deity should have something more. How can I see the deity without any proper clothes, without proper jewelry? So we started bringing more and more things to the deity. and starting putting everything on the deity, because in our mind we are only relate with the Supreme. That's nothing wrong in that, because it's naturally we want to give everything to Krishna, whatever best we have. But the result is, when we start introducing all these things, we also became necessary to increase the security in the temple. Because when the deities get all this jewelry, all this expensive jewelry, especially big temples, they don't use plastic jewelry. They use the genuine gold or jewels, whatever that has been offered by the devotees. And if you start bringing in all this and start putting on Krishna's form, on deity form, so naturally you have to have, Krishna also needs tight security. Krishna requires tight security. Just like in the temple, sometimes some people are coming and giving a lot of money. They put it in front of the deity. Somebody is taking it also from there. Krishna is not seeing it. Krishna stands there and smiles at both the people. One who is giving and one who is taking also. To both of them, Krishna is smiling. So what can you do? Krishna doesn't say to the person, don't take it, you are going to be in trouble because of that. No, he doesn't realize it. He thinks Krishna doesn't see anything. He's standing there anyway, why do I bother? I'll take it. So somebody is taking it from Krishna's chest. Somebody is giving to Krishna, somebody is taking to Krishna. Krishna is not bothered. Krishna is watching everything, because he has set up the rules in such a way that if you take something from Krishna, you know what will happen. That is in the Ekadasha Skandham, Krishna talks about it later. So Krishna doesn't need any of these things, but still we have to offer everything to Krishna. So this temple worship, originally which started in a simple way over years, and as Dwabare Paricharyayam Paricharanam, or the deity worship processes improved and advanced so much, massive temples were built, and along with that, simultaneously, the process of worship also became very elaborate and very opulent and expensive. So that is how this temple worship has come to this stage of worship. Otherwise, Krishna only says only four things, patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam. He says, they give it to me, I am satisfied. But in all these things, Shraddha is more important. But according to one's capacity, Krishna expects the devotee to also offer his best to Krishna. So, in the Bhagavad Gita you will find from now onwards, what you will find is that this deity worship, what Krishna talks about is also necessary to realize Krishna in this world. Otherwise it is impossible. Through the process of deity worship, one realizes Krishna. But what happens mostly is that one takes to the process of deity worship and one gets stuck with it. He thinks that this is it. And then why? Because he has got the fear of leaving it at the end. At the time of death, he is not able to go further than that. The Vedic philosophy is saying, deity worship is a process to help you to get there, to realize Krishna. But if you are not realizing Krishna, simply get stuck with deity worship throughout life, that is also not the right thing. That also is not good. Because then you are not moving further from there. So, in generally, what is done is, that in the process of worshipping the deity, slowly, slowly, that progress has to happen in spiritual life. And when the deity worship is supplementing your understanding of Krishna consciousness, then it is good. But if one becomes simply absorbed in deity worship and thinking that, I'm doing deity worship and I'll keep the deity worship going so people can come and put money in front of the deity and they can go and it become a business, then the whole thing is gone. It's completely wasted time. So therefore, Krishna says, to understand this process of deity worship. The deity worship is not a process meant for destroy, it's only to supplement our understanding of Krishna. What is Krishna? In order to help us in our understanding of Krishna. Just like, say for example, we are traveling to say Sahasri temple. Say 15, 16 miles we have to go. Every mile we go, 1 kilometer, 1 mile we finish. Should we take away the milestone and throw it away? Now I have finished that mile, I can go to the next mile and throw away that milestone and move to the next mile? No. We don't do that. Why? The reason is this. Krishna answers that in the Bhagavad Gita. Even if you have come to a higher understanding of Krishna consciousness, even if you have come to a higher understanding of Krishna consciousness, one should not give these things up, because it will create doubt in the minds of the ordinary people. Therefore, they should not give up deity worship. They are doing deity worship only for one reason, so that others in the world do not give up worshipping the deity. Many, many times, great devotees, advanced devotees, who have realized the absolute truth, realized Krishna, why do they perform deity worship? Vilumangalam, for example. Vilumangalam used to play with Krishna. Krishna was manifesting for him often in his life. And throughout Karnamadam you will find Krishna Vilumangalam expressing the different pastimes, what he had been experiencing with Krishna. And that Vilumangalam never gave up deity worship. Why did he have to worship deity when Krishna was personally coming to him? The answer is in the Narada Bhakti Sutra. Narada Maharshi says that Shangaya what? Shanga of the ordinary people. If Vilumangalam gives up deity worship, what will happen? After some time, others will start. Oh, I have also realized I don't need deity worship. Like this, everybody will give up deity worship, which means that process will not stay in this world. So, in order that people continue to be inspired for their benefit, great personalities will continue the deity worship, even though themselves they don't need personally need it. Madhusudana Saraswati, so many examples in the history you can see this, that they have gone beyond that deity worship stage. They have realized Krishna in one way or the other, through dreams, sleep, and even in their waking state, Krishna manifested before them. Sanatana Goswami, take for example, Rupa Goswami, what do they need for them for deity worship? They are seeing Krishna all the time in their personal life. Many, many instances, Krishna appeared to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana. Many instances, we see that throughout history. So for them, once they have come to that relationship with Krishna, but still Sanatana installed Radha Madan Mohan, Rupa Goswami installed Radha Govindaji, and Jiva Goswami installed Radha Damodar. Why? Only for this reason. If they don't do it, the ordinary people like us, we have no hope. We will give up deity worship because we'll also find an excuse to give, because we are very good at it in giving excuses. There is nobody better than us in doing this. So knowing very well the psychology of the human society, these great acharyas have established deity worship and encouraged ordinary people to follow through the process of deity worship. Till the point they come to the level of Vilumangalam or Goswamis and all the great devotees like that. So that is another important point in the 12th chapter. So Krishna says here that Yedu Sarvani Karmani Maisanya Syamalpara Ananyeneva Yogena Mam Dhyayandam Upasade. From now on, what Krishna does is, Krishna gives a lot of choices, one after the other, to Arjuna. You'll be amazed how kind Krishna is when he gives the choices. Only thing is, every time a choice is given, Arjuna says, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. That's all. That's the type of choice Krishna has offered here. We'll discuss that next Sunday. Not next Sunday, the Sunday after. Next Sunday is Rath Yatra, so we won't have a class. But on 25th, that Sunday, we will discuss it. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
So nice to hear you after such a long time. Wish my husband would allow me to come in the evening. Normally evening, morning, all, you know, 4 o'clock onwards, all service goes on. And then one day. But it's very nice to hear that. Wait, are you leaving week after? You were leaving?
Yeah.
So that will be last full time. And you were coming back, you know,
that's the plan.